Welcome to another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed, indeed. 866-901-ADAM. Now, we like to do a little How Say You at this point, but Brian Austin Green is supposed to be on the phone. He's from the new Terminator show.
Yeah, he starts, I think, this week.
The Terminator show starts this week?
No, he starts on it. He's a new cast member joining.
You did say he starts, which was ambiguous because I was like, I thought that show started a week and a half ago.
Fifth episode is this Monday.
All right, now I got it all worked out. Yeah, and of course, 90210, but he's not on the line yet, so we'll talk to Dan from DeKalb.
Oh, DeKalb Dan.
Yeah, he's our man. All right. As you know, DeKalb was the first college I ever spoke at.
Famous for?
Wow.
Cindy Crawford and Barb Wire. And as I had to point out to the very proud people of DeKalb, Cindy Crawford moved as soon as she got her learner's permit. Because, look, I could have been born in Calcutta. Doesn't mean I'm buying a condo there. You have no choice where you're born. You do have a choice where you live. She lives in Malibu now. Barb Wire, first off, both existed. It's like Raisin Bran. Both elements existed. You guys just knocked them together, and I'm sure it would have been done in another 15 minutes. And I'll bet you if I had 10 minutes to walk through Europe, I'd find 100 guys who said they invented barbed wire 200 years before you did.
Cindy Crawford invented it as she was leaving DeKalb.
Is that what they were trying to rope her in?
Don't follow me. Don't follow me.
Oh, I thought they invented it to try to keep her in.
Oh, I must have got my story confused.
I wouldn't want Cindy to get out either.
Oh.
All right, let's see. Ah, yes, Brian Austin Green is on the line, I do believe. So let's try this. I mean, what's that the theme for? I don't know. What are you playing?
The greatest theme songs ever written.
Yes, say Brian Austin Green.
One of the best guitar solos I've ever heard.
I must say,
Rival that of Slash and, you know, a few others.
I watched the show religiously. What I would call a guilty pleasure.
Really?
Absolutely. I watched Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90210 fairly religiously back in the, what, early 90s to mid-90s? Was 90210 like 91 through 98 or something? When did it start?
90210 was 90 to 2000.
Wow, 10 years.
Were you there the entire reign?
I was there the whole run.
So did you work with Hilary Swank?
I did work with Hillary.
What did you think of her back in the day?
I thought she was great. She was a good actress then.
Mm.
She was fired, though, right?
Yeah, but she wasn't fired for her acting ability. I think it was just a matter of her not getting along so well with the person she was working with.
Mm-hmm. Would that be Tori or...
No.
No.
No, she actually worked with Ian.
Ah, aha.
Well, he showed her.
Little friction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He yelled, "You'll rue the day."
When you're winning, you're one, you're two.
We'll never work in this town again.
Right. Now, before we get on to the Terminator or the Sarah Connor Chronicles, quickly, what I'm interested in your story, Brian. So does something bring you to Hollywood? Where are you born? Where do you grow up?
Being born brought me to Hollywood. I was born in North Hollywood.
I was in North Hollywood.
You went to school with my sister.
I did. Who's your sister?
Lori Kovac.
Oh, really? That's your sister?
You
talk about you all the time. She laughs about going to school with you. Yeah.
I know her sister. I know her. I know his sister well. We went to grade school together.
Went to, like, Walter Reed, I think, right?
Let me tell you this. First off, Lori was the hottest girl at Colfax Elementary. She was the best looking. You know how you have to decide? I don't know if you guys do this, but does everyone do this where when you're in grade school, like, you have to decide who the best looking girl is mm-hmm. in the sixth grade,
yeah.
and then you have to use her as an example?
Yeah.
So you go.
Exactly.
So
and the bar from her.
Yeah. Sadly, you have to also pick out the ugliest girl too. Oh. So you go like, yeah, you want to go out with Ella Johnson or do you want to go out with Lori Kovac? So wait a minute.
Poor Ella Johnson.
Yeah.
You you guys lived, or Lori Kovac was too good looking to talk to me, but she went to, you guys live right there in North Hollywood, right?
Yeah. And yeah, my parents are still in the same house.
Now,
I grew up.
And that's off of, I kind of remember the direction she would walk, and then she would start running serpentine and zigzagging, and then she did a shoulder roll over a hedge when I would lose her, and I'd get on the talkie. And I'd yell, the fox has gotten out of the barn.
She would go to decoy houses.
She'd go to safe houses along the way.
I lost her in the bushes.
There were a lot of Lori impersonators. Yeah, she was like Saddam Hussein in his final months.
Yeah, no.
But I know you guys lived toward the church on the other side of Colfax there before you got to the park somewhere
in
there?
Yeah, we were right on the small side of the park. My parents are still in the same house.
Holy crap. Now, yeah. Brian Austin Green, you're a fair bit younger than me and Lori, I would imagine. So you came around later. Mm-hmm. Is there a step something getting involved here or something?
Yeah. My mom actually remarried and then had me.
Mm-hmm. Wow, she does. She's got a nice good gene going because I gotta tell you, Lori was a stoned fox.
Brian, what's Lori up to now?
She's actually cutting hair. She's been a hairstylist for years.
Well, I tell her I said hi, by the way.
I will, absolutely. It's funny. We actually, you come up every once in a while, like when my son and I will be playing Adam Carolla in the pool, you know.
instead of Marco Polo.
Instead of Marco Polo, exactly.
It's caught on.
It did. Well, it did here, you know, up in the Hollywood Hills area.
Sure.
Sure. A lot of kids screaming it.
Wow.
But yeah, she'll laugh about it every once in a while.
Wow. Now and she went to Walter Reed, where I ended up going too. I do believe. And then, so Brian, you start now. When did you realize you were destined for greatness? When did the acting start with you?
I was going to, for elementary, junior high, I went to 32nd Street Performing Arts School. On the USC campus downtown there.
Well, that's cool. How'd you get involved with that?
Well, I went there for music. You know, I grew up, my dad's a drummer, so I went there studying music, and student directors from USC would come over to our school and take kids for their student films. You know, they'd mm-hmm. use kids for the weekend, and I did a couple of those student films, and this kid that I rode the bus with, Jeremy Gosch, was already doing commercials and stuff, and so it seemed kind of cool that, you know, he was making his own money and sort of doing his own thing. And I thought, yeah, I want to make some money. That'd be really cool.
Hold on, Brian. If you want to make money, you should have hung out in North Hollywood with me and my buddy Ray and Chris.
No,
we could have cleaned carpets together. It would have been awesome, dude.
I know. It was a toss-up, cleaning carpets with you.
Brian, do you want to...
Throwing bonds or acting.
Do you want to hear something humiliating? You know the Taco Bell up on the corner of Magnolia and Colfax?
Where Yum Yum Donuts is.
Yes, yeah. Right across the street.
Yeah.
I applied for a job there when I was in the 10th grade and was rejected.
Were you really?
I was not Bell material. Can you imagine what that does to the fragile psyche of a 10th grader struggling with a sexuality?
Did they actually give you a reason, or it was you were just denied?
I was denied.
They didn't even take the form.
I put an application in. I think I followed it up a couple days later because my dad's house was right over there. So I walked over there, and they told me, no can do.
That's awesome.
You didn't demand a reason?
No.
But what a great story. You know,
I know. It is good. So you get into act. Now, when does 90210 come for you? How old are you at this point?
I was 17.
17?
Yeah. I went from 32nd Street to Hamilton. I was going to Hamilton for a few years,
mm-hmm.
Still studying music, and then I started failing classes because I was missing time acting. You know, I was out doing stuff. So I transferred to North Hollywood High just to step it up academically.
Sure.
Really, you know? So I went to North Hollywood High, and then I started doing the show, and I actually graduated from Amelia Earhart right there on the corner. I don't know if you were familiar with Amelia Earhart.
I was. It was for all the ace students that like to smoke and call their teachers by their first name.
It was for really the best students in school.
The cream of the crop. Yeah, yeah, my sister went there. You punched in about noon, blew a few butts, and headed out about 1 o'clock to go smoke some weed in the park.
It was the greatest setup ever.
No.
They actually gave us punch cards, and we had the option of coming in at, you know, whatever, at 3 different times. It was fantastic.
Really?
You could sit in one classroom and do all the work from all the classes, pick whichever teacher you wanted to hang out with. You just really had to do like a set, you know, number of hours every day, and that was it.
Yeah, it was like two.
It was like home study in a classroom.
It was like two bungalows. Yeah, you should all hope that your kids don't do alternative anything. Alternative school, alternative comedy,
lifestyle.
Alternative lifestyles, alternative music. If I, as a parent, if I hear the word alternative come, I'm just going to dive out of the window of my condominium. If I hear alternative school, as a parent, much worse than alternative lifestyle.
Yeah.
I think I could get around that. Alternative school trouble.
Right.
So, wow, Brian, I feel like we could go on forever. So you go.
Oh, we could, because we're from the same place. We're from the same hood.
You finish your tenure over there at 90210 at the young age of 27 or 28, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you're basically set for life because of residuals and things like that, and now you can pick and choose your roles, or what's the feeling?
Yeah, I'm pretty well set. I'm not set for life, not with the way I spent money, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, I don't really want to be retired by the time I'm 30. You know, honestly, I plan on hopefully working as long as I can. So.
And features, TV, I mean, obviously you have the Terminator.
Hard. Yeah, I'm doing Terminator right now, which is so much fun. It's a really cool show to do.
Who do you play?
Well, I can't say who I play because my character hasn't come on yet. I start on Monday on the air. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool character.
Bartender number 3.
It could be reporter number 2.
Well, Brian, we'll be...
Newspaper delivery boy number 8.
Brian Austin Green will be watching Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which, by the way, seems to be a runaway hit for Fox. And again, that's Monday night, 9 p.m. Tell your sister, Lori, that the Ace Man says hi, but don't let her do that thing where she pretends like she thought I was cute in the 6th grade, because I'm tired of that revisionist history.
Okay. All right. You want the truth and nothing but?
Yeah, well, not all of it.
Not a total whitewash, a beige wash.
A beige wash, yeah, but give her my love in a very platonic way, and next time, come in and we'll talk to you in the studio.
I'd love to, man, and I'll be playing more Adam Carolla in my pool this summer.
Thank you. Wow, Brian Austin Green. Yeah, his sister, Lori Kovac, hottest chick in junior high and in the 6th grade. And again, you had to decide on one. There was the one.
There was one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the cautionary one
you
didn't want.
That's right. It's like, eat right, get your exercise, you'll end up with Lori Kovac, or you could end up with, I can think of her name.
I'm sure she'll be
Stephanie
delighted.
Metzger.
That was trouble?
That was trouble.
Wow.
Maybe she was just a phase.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she's even still with us. But that was bad times. Yeah. Yeah, she was the fox. She was the stone fox of the 6th grade of Colfax. Then she made it in. Now then you have to be able to transfer your foxitude.
Yeah.
You have to take it to the next level. Like a lot of guys, they're great college players, but can they make it in the game? Can they go to the show with it? She took it to the Walter Reed Junior High. Now there's a lot of competition. There's 2,000 other potential foxes running around there. She slipped a couple of notches, but was still very foxy. And then somehow I lost her in high school. I think she may have won over to Amelia Earhart, had a smoke with her teachers, Rich and Steve.
The Kejana Carter of high school.
Maybe that's exactly what everyone listening was thinking. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. Ah, Brian, too,
uh-oh,
is on the blower.
Oh,
for those
I love
of you
when he calls.
Who haven't listened to Brian, too, he wants to mash it up with the original Brian. We'll do that. How say you? We'll take your phone calls. We'll do that next.
It's the Adam Carolla Show, and here's what's coming up with program director Jack Silver.
Check, check, check. Happy Chinese New Year, peeps. from the film No Country for Old Men, Oscar nominee Javier Bardem, the star of Flavor of Love 3, Flava Flav, comedian Norm MacDonald, a recap of last night's American Idol, and we'll be recruiting hot chicks to join us next week at our big Playboy Mansion show. Oh, hey, you're in luck. Jack Mann's an expert at recruiting hot chicks. And by recruiting, I mean roofying. And by chicks, I mean guys. Okay.
Thank you, Jack. And by thank you, I mean get out of my studio. 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Good times. Well, we got some calls lined up here. And Javier Bardem, I'm excited to speak to him. I really am.
No Country for Old Men was phenomenal. And that scene with the coin toss...
That was one of the best scenes I'd seen in the last few years of movie making. Although Flavor Flav could have easily played that role. Easily.
He'll be following Javier Bardem on our show.
He's before him. And Norm MacDonald and Flavor Flav are essentially the same guy, too. So, I, you know, to me, it just seems like we're loaded for bear this morning. All right. Brian, two.
Oh, how say you?
Yeah, what's happening, Brian, two?
I'm going to try to word this where you don't get bleeped out. D-R-I-N-K-I-N.
Yep, there is so many cuss words.
I'm in the Mediterranean in the super warm water. I got a pina colada in my hand, a beautiful woman on my arm. They speak English, and they like their quaaludes.
Oh, boy. This is nice.
I got stuff to talk about. Let's see. Jewish performance artist Shirley Phelps. Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with Shirley, I must admit. Hey, Shirley Phelps, your dad is a religious man.
Nope, no, hon. He is, in fact, okay to be gay. That was a big deal. But yet, look, if you go to YouTube, there he is. My dad smoking dope.
You smoke copious amounts of weed all the time.
Of course we're smoking dope. Are you kidding me? We do that every day. You know, it's trash in, trash out. Flames coming from their eye sockets. Here, let me partake of a little of that and show you how to do it, hon.
Out here we is stoned, immaculate.
Wow. Hey, Brian, too?
Can you help me move my bong?
Yeah, we can have... Dawson says he's got a hand truck made of hemp. He'll help you do it.
Later, husband.
All right, but hold on a second. I'm going to cut you off. That is like if you were lighting a cigarette and your dog stood up on its hind legs and said, you'll make $5 billion if you have it my way. But I give people crap all the time, and I have no rules.
You know,
I'm from Dudesildorf.
Brian's, too, has raised his game.
Yeah.
He's now mashing up Shirley Phelps. Oh, you're welcome, Brian, too.
Yeah. He's mashing Shirley Phelps up with a slowed down version of me.
Yeah.
To those of you new to Brian, too, that's me slowed down a little bit. Hey, Brian, too, bang the phone.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Well, that's a McConaughey. Bang the phone against your head when you're out of taped material.
Click, click.
All right.
Again, thanks for taking the time out from your dating life.
Hey, guys, I actually did want to break the fourth wall for a second, if I may.
Sure.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Wait a minute, I got something to say about that.
Mm. No!
Anyway.
Nice stealing Brian's drops.
Yeah.
No!
Oh, my gosh. Yesterday, Adam, you said something about having a movie theme called Awesome, or a movie called Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I heard that last night on the podcast, and I went home and did a little mix of it. Would you like to hear a 30-second theme song for your movie?
I want to one day direct a film titled Awesome so that I can be called Awesome Director Adam Carolla, much like that Julia Roberts forever gets called Pretty Woman Julia Roberts. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, okay. Your obituary would say
Awesome Director Adam Carolla. Okay, yeah, let's hear it.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, you'll recognize the tune, but I put some of your stuff sprinkled on it. Here we go.
This is America, everybody. Don't get me wrong. I think I'm better than all of you. I feel like I'm being asked where. Awesome. I just love talking. Yeah. Oh, man. Awesome.
6 months on Brian not getting laid for every 4 seconds of this song that plays.
Getting up to a few years now.
Oh, no, we're at the five-year mark. Nice. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Awesome, buddy.
Prodigy Firestarter.
Nice job.
Thanks.
Brian, do you have a woman in your life?
Absolutely. I'm a married man with a little boy.
Ah, nice. Yeah. Okay.
Employed and everything.
Good times. Now, what did you say you did for a living?
I do computer training. I'm around computers all day, so, you know, it sort of gives me a chance to dink around with it when I have a chance.
Well, I must say that I am flattered that you spend this kind of time on our program, so thank you, Brian, too.
Nerd! Most welcome. So, I guess does Brian want to do, or do you want me just to do a little outro and out we go?
Yeah, give us an outro.
All right, let's see what we have here, okay?
Let me be crystal clear about this. I talked to Leno on Sunday at noon, and I talked to Kimmel, and they both said, I taught Bonaducci at that school 30 years ago, and I started to vomit and yell. But I'm saying, it'd be easy to say, oh, he's jealous, or oh, he's scared, but the reality is he just doesn't think about it. It's a weird thing to sort of wrap your mind around, because you have to figure out what the agenda is before you take on the task. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, nice job.
And I enjoy your life choices.
Thank you, Brian, too.
All right.
Okay, I never know when we can officially stop.
I know, I don't want to interrupt one of his drafts.
I feel like we compete in different events, like we play different sports.
You're both great nerd athletes,
yes,
though.
He's awesome.
He's more of a shot putter, and you do all the other ones.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let's see. Steve.
Yeah.
You want to compliment the show?
Yes, I do. I think you guys got it dialed in.
Well, thank you.
You got the perfect combination. You and your Jap sidekick are really bust me up.
Thank you. And what about Bald Brian doing his magic on his computer?
Well, you know, it's just enough. You know, it's just a splash of Brian. You know, just enough to kind of break up the monotony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like paprika. A little bit goes a long way.
This is the weirdest complimentary call. I was called a Jap, and Brian was basically called paprika.
Jap and Paprika, great 80s rap duo.
We broke up.
Jap and Paprika.
Yeah.
Well, after the car accident.
Right. We never could really get together after that. You know, Paprika thought it was all about him and, you know.
VH1 is going to get you two back together. By the way, Paprika's a chick. She just wore her hair that way. So it looked like a dude.
You don't realize that Jap and Paprika were really a pioneering group because back then girls did not rap.
No, they didn't. Guys. They were background singers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't mix it up like Jap and Pap. I mean, you guys were outspoken and open with your sexuality.
Oh. You know, girls like Missy should be thanking Jap and Paprika.
You paved the road for the Missy Elliotts of the world?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And Queen Latifah? Mm-hmm. There wouldn't have been no Queen Latifah.
If there was not a Jap and Paprika. Awesome. Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
Thank you for the backhanded compliment.
You're welcome.
All righty, then. Is Jap, how bad is Jap?
Bad.
Is that bad?
I don't care.
It wasn't that bad.
Here's the thing. I don't take it personally because I think people are confused about it, and he obviously wasn't saying it intentionally to be rude, or he wouldn't have been using it as a compliment.
You know what it's like? Mulatto. What?
People don't know.
You're not supposed to say that.
That is, yeah, very, it's Oriental also. Not supposed to say
it. Not supposed to say it. That one we figured out. I feel.
Mulatto still gets tossed around now.
Although Oriental rug screws everybody up.
I know. Is it an Asian rug?
That's still around.
Yeah.
No, evidently that's not frowned on. Mulatto is bad.
Very bad.
Jap, I didn't feel. See, the thing about Jap is it got phased out. It was a very 80s, early 90s thing, and then it got phased out. So we didn't sit with it long enough to decide it was bad. So I think it slid under people's bad radar.
Yeah, I do. I think people don't know. It's derogatory. I think it sort of insinuates, well, if you're a princess, it insinuates that you're wealthy. It has
Well, here's what it is with most put-downs. They're not always based in something that's horrible, but they're meant to be a put-down, thus you shouldn't say them.
Right.
So,
Jap is almost
Jewish,
never used currently.
Jewish, not bad.
Not bad.
Unless you're living next door to one. American,
pretty good.
American, fine, no problemo there. Princess, well, oh. I call my daughter Princess.
I love that on its own.
Right. So it's a weird thing where the three parts really in and of themselves aren't bad. Then when you combine them, it's like, you know what it is? It's like some sort of rocket fuel. When you have the three elements, the sodium and the bicarbonate and the K.O. Maga Muga Paka Binitro, whatever, you keep them all in separate containers, no problem. Put them together, you got a Jap.
That's right.
Yes. What? But the real thing about Jap, and it's the real thing about most of these derogatory terms, when they're meant to be a put down and Jap is meant to be a put down, then it's offensive. See, when people say mulatto, and they're trying to say half black,
biracial,
half white, they're trying to say that, and then people get offended, I always argue, don't be offended when the person wasn't attempting to put you down. That's just ignorance.
They don't know.
You know, that happens all the time.
Yeah, and
where
Steve
people
didn't try to offend me.
People let stuff fly. People let stuff fly, and then people get all up in arms about it, and the person didn't know what they were saying.
Sure. A lot of people don't know not to say mulatto, or Jap, for that matter.
All right. Well, Jap is a basic, very, I don't know why, but Jap seemed to go out with the 80s, at the end of the
80s. I haven't heard that in years. I just remember thinking, if I'm a princess, why is my dad a mechanic and I'm on free lunch?
You can be funny without making fun of someone else.
This Jap thing is all
wrong.
But
you wouldn't be, you know, you wouldn't be
the stereotypical Jap.
No, you wouldn't. Like, you know, I'm Italian, but I wouldn't be the mook guy
Guido.
Who's in the mafia or the Guido guy from New Jersey.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Teresa's Jap is with a lowercase p.
Right. All right, let's see. Who is it talk to? Someone brings up a good point here. John?
Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good, John.
Hey, man, I was watching Cloverfield the other day, the theater, and it was awesome. But in the first 10 minutes of the movie, they had this scene at the party where they had this music mix, and one of the songs was Sean Kingston's Beautiful Girl.
I know.
Yeah.
I
could think of was how you probably hated that movie at that point.
I did for the, you know, 18 seconds they played that song. I had a seizure, actually. Bald Brian had to put his wallet in my mouth. Thank God there's nothing in it.
Fit perfectly.
I almost choked on a condom from 1987. Yeah.
Still good.
It's a dental
did not
dam,
go down easy.
Oh, dental that is dam. The worst song ever made.
It is a horrible, horrible song, and you know it was completely out of place because you have these sort of young, basically white people in trendy Tribeca, right in the middle of Manhattan, and they're playing this super crappy, gummy, sort of gooey Kiss FM. Rick D's retarded, meant for stupid people music. And that is meant for stupid people. If you like that music, or if you like Lean Like a Cholo, or if you like whatever, you're stupid. You're stupid. I mean, look, I'm tired of breaking everything up into personal tastes. Like, hey, I think Dukes of Hazzard's the best show on television. You like The Simpsons? Well, that's just my opinion versus, no, you're retarded. You're a stupid person. If you like that ranchero music, you're dumb. If you like that Sean Kingston song, you're dumb. If you like Lean Like a Cholo, you're dumb. It's not about different tastes. It's about dumb. That's all.
Adam.
I'm so tired of everyone being so lenient of everybody and worried about their feelings. And by the way, it's just like calling your dog fat. Your dog doesn't know it. The people that listen to that song and like that song, the people that listen to Lean Like a Cholo and like that song, they don't know it when you're calling them dumb. I call them dumb all the time. We should be outraged as a society. We really should. That song blows whale ass.
Thank you. I've been saying that ever since it came out.
Yes.
John, you made a good point about Cloverfield in that the characters were sort of hipsters and they would never have been listening.
The one guy's going off to Japan to allegedly do something cool. Everyone's dressed like they're out of a catalog. You know what I mean? These are like, that whole crew was what? College educated, NYU, 20 something, you know, 25, 26 year old. Sort of cool, hipster, educated, whatever. They'd be listening to Modest Mouse.
Right.
They'd not be listening to crappy, retarded, 14-year-old music.
And how I know Modest Mouse is cool, I just pretended I knew what that was.
That's right.
I have no idea.
Oh, really? Never heard of that?
No.
Thing?
That's how I know it's what, you know, the Cloverfield kids would be listening to.
Do we have that song somewhere? I swear I went and got
Beautiful
it for
girl.
Music Monday.
Oh, it was deleted with all the rest of my files.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
But I found it online.
And isn't it Under the Boardwalk that,
No. Oh, it was Benny
Stand
King.
By Me.
Stand By Me.
Right, which sounds like Under the Boardwalk,
yes.
too. So not only is it a ripoff of a song from the 50s, but it goes into the robot voice thing. Let's listen to this. Number one, by the way.
See, it started at the park, used to chill after dark, ooh, when you took my heart.
Still reaching for his cell phone right now.
Is this his ringtone?
That's his, no, Lean Like a Cholo.
Last forever.
Listen.
Last forever.
All right, it's robot music. It's the antithesis of music. It's like if I said, hey, you want to try some vegetables I made in the lab?
Yeah,
it's made of synthesized gluten, and I got coloring that looks almost like broccoli. No, you're missing the point. It's music.
So our minds and ears are going to eventually die of scurvy.
That's right.
How about they're playing this at proms?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're playing the S out of this at proms. All right. I'm disgusted, all of yous. Where the hell were we? Do we need to take a break?
Yeah.
One more call. Let's see. This guy hates kids, and he works with autistic kids.
Oh, let's talk to him.
Hey. Oh, it's a girl. Emily?
Hello.
What's happening?
Good morning.
Hi, Emily.
How are you guys doing?
You work with autistic kids?
I do. I work as a personal assistant in the home of autistic children.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does that go?
I mean, it's pretty much like babysitting, but with special needs children. It's not hard. I mean, it's an amazing job. I just don't really even like kids.
You don't like kids.
I don't. I can't really stand children.
Now, were your parents bad to you?
No, I just, kids are annoying to me, like loud and everywhere.
Well, kids are kind of like pets. If they're not yours, they suck because
exactly. You're
cleaning up someone else's dookie, literally.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, and then autistic, that's times 10 because not only, you know, do you have kids that aren't yours, but they're unruly and they have issues and so on and so forth. Yeah. So what's the plan?
You know, that's what I want to talk to you about. I don't even know. I don't even know what to do with my life.
How much do you get an hour?
I make $13.75 an hour.
Not bad, but not great. How about you film them having sex and go ahead and throw it up on YouTube?
Why didn't I think of that earlier?
Yeah, see if you can turn a buck.
How old are these kids?
Well, the one that I'm about to go work with this morning, she is 7. Mm. And I work with another girl who's 17. So.
All right, well, you get those two together. They're companies out of Germany that'll pay good money. You get a cup and a tripod. Boy, Emily, you smoke some weed, don't you, baby?
Absolutely.
I know the pot laugh, baby
Later,
girl.
Cousin.
That's it.
Wow. Well, I wonder where she's from, Bald Brian.
Oh, yeah.
She might be from Dawson's hometown.
Right. She's got to be from Germany.
Yes, right there in the heart of Germany.
I'm from Dudeseldorf.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, I don't know if the pot is making it easier or more difficult to handle these.
Oh, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, you're probably right. Can you bring a brownie or something and just get a nice buzz on through the day?
You know what? I actually am having a lollipop. That's like, I have
a
lollipop
smart.
Every morning.
Sure.
Every morning.
Strong. Hey,
great.
Hey, it must be weird for the person that owns the house. Like, yeah, she comes in every morning, she eats a lollipop, and then she goes to a bag of Bugles.
Yeah, and by the way, I can't be convinced of this, but the everyday morning pot lollipop, not one of the 7 habits of highly effective people.
Really?
I don't know. It's been a while since I read it.
Richard Branson doesn't do that anymore?
I don't know for sure.
Hey, Emily, you know what else could be fun? Getting the kids high like you do with pets, you know?
You just blow a little smoke?
Just blow it at them?
Yeah, what are they going to know and who are they going to tell?
Interesting.
And by the way, who's going to know the difference?
Oh, exactly.
And why? And look, if I had Down syndrome or autism or I was autistic, whatever I had, I wouldn't mind catching a buzz.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we forget about my problems for a little bit. Well, Emily, if this isn't for you, you need to probably motivate and get into something else. I would say start by not having the popsicle every morning.
I'll tell you what, though, Emily, for a 21-year-old, you've got a little something going on.
Yeah.
Seems smart.
You're close to $14 an hour. You're taking care of business, so you're smart. Let's use it. Let's push it in a direction that suits you.
I really want to go to Groundlings, but that is...
You want to do comedy?
I really do, yeah.
Why not
do it?
I know, but then I have to... I don't even know how to work that out on my schedule.
All right, let me yell at you and everyone else in 20 seconds, and then we're taking a break. How are you going to do this? How are you going to invent something and have your full-time job? How are you going to get your bachelor's degree and pay your rent? How? Well, all the successful people historically have figured out a way how. It's not rocket science. You get up and do it. You go, wow, if I work all day and then go to school all night, I'm not going to have much time left for a social life. That's right. But you do it. Yeah, but if I go there and then I do this, I'll barely have any money left. I'll have spent all my money outside of rent and food on these classes. Yep. Yes, you will. Yes, you will. That's how it works. And by the way, if you just went to work for an hour and then made $1 million and could take improv classes or go to night school or whatever, then everyone would do it. And then you wouldn't get paid much to do it. It's difficult. It's supposed to be difficult. It's why we give medals out for the Olympics. If everyone could just run a, 900 yard hurdles, then we'd all get it and it wouldn't mean anything. It's supposed to be difficult. You're supposed to sacrifice. And that's why it sort of separates the doers from the pot lickers.
Yeah. Big risk, big reward.
There you go. So of course it cramps your style.
Yeah.
Everyone's style is cramped by that. Go do it. Okay. We need to take ourselves a break. When we come back, what can't Adam complain about? 866-901-ADAM. If you're on the line and you want to toss out a topic, by all means. If not, 866-901-ADAM. What can't Adam complain about next?
Back to the Adam Carolla Show, where it's time to play a round of what can't Adam complain about.
I don't think you can complain about Guitar Hero on PlayStation. There's just no way.
When I was a young kid, it was called Guitar Tennis Racket. I would play it to Boston's peace of mind.
What can't Adam complain about? Call 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, you try to stump me. Because I'll tell you, I kick into... Oh, my bell. Yeah, thank you, Paul Bryan. It really kicks in for me when I'm doing things I enjoy. You know, anyone can go down to the DMV and complain. I go to beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, and I fly first class, and I never stop complaining all the way there.
You did 25 minutes on the perils of flying first class to British Columbia with your lovely wife.
I did. All right, should we do it? Let's get it on.
Stuff. The world is full of it. And one man has a complaint for it all. This is What Can't Adam Complain About?
Matt, 24, my brother. What can I complain about?
All right, Adam, you cannot complain about a nail gun. Using a nail gun when nailing off shear panel.
Shear panels, half-inch plywood. Put the stamp side on the outside so the inspector can see it, and you do it vertically, and then you nail it off. Now, you nail on the seams 6 inches, and you nail in the center, I think it's 12 inches is the nailing schedule.
Depending on the schedule.
Yes, in the field. Well, a couple things. One, I heard it was illegal to use the vinyl-coated sinkers on that these days. I'm not sure if that's true. But here's the problem with nail guns. Nail guns, although they're fast and fun and all that, first off, super fake, because in movies, they pick the nail guns up and they start shooting them like a gun. Nail guns have a safety. You have to depress the end against the wood or the nail won't fire. By the way, how fast would you be out of business if you made nail guns that Mel Gibson could just pick up and fire willy-nilly across the construction site? No, if you take a nail gun and you press it against someone's forehead and depress the end of it, then it'll fire. If you hold it, it will not fire unless you do what we used to do, which is take your free hand, pull the safety back, which meant the nail would sail right past your hand. Still worth it to fire it at other guys you work with. Oh, dance, Mexicans, dance, I would yell. I'd throw my hat down. There you go. Just like in native Mexico. What happened to the hat dance? All right, here's the problem with the nail gun. Problem with the nail gun is you fire one, it sets perfectly. The nail's flush with the plywood. The next one you fire, the nail head is hanging out a half inch. The next one you fire blows a hole right through it and goes all the way through it. They can't get the depth right or they can't get the plywood right. It's a good, but it's a good invention, but still not perfect. And thus, I can complain. Hey, Daniel.
Yeah, what's going on?
What can't I complain about?
Adam, I'm a big fan.
Hey, thank you.
I'm going to go with a kegerator.
Well, this is easy. Kimmel's got a kegerator over at his house, and he's got Heineken in there. Not my first choice, but, you know, I can't complain. I'm over there eating the pizza and having a good time for free. His kegerator puts way too much head on the glass, and then the problem is some a-hole comes by and goes, let me show you how to do it, and he pours it without a head, and I feel impotent. You know, and you're standing there and you pour that beer that has, oh, just an eighth inch of amber-colored beer at the bottom and then 9 inches of white frothy foam, and then you stand by it. I've never felt like more of an alcoholic than when I'm standing by the beer waiting for the head to go down so I can get a sip of my precious medicine, like I'm just standing there. And then there's that idiot who goes, you know how you get rid of it? You put your finger in it. So then you stuff your filthy finger into the foamy part of the beer and you're standing there with your hand stuffed in the glass and people are walking by going, what an idiot. So I'm just standing there. Then there's that thing where I try to get the premature sip. That's the part where I really feel like an alcoholic, where I'm like, all right, the head hasn't gone away yet, but I can get a little taste of medicine. Daddy can get just a little precious taste of medicine. Then you dump it, and then you have that big foamy upper lip while you're trying to get the thing. Then you do the next pour where you try to hold the glass at an angle, but it doesn't work. And then some a-hole comes by and pours it without a head. I don't know what the trick is. They should teach it in junior high.
Oh, yeah.
If you think about all the things that you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, trigonometry, calculus, world history, all good stuff to have in your back pocket, but pouring a stein without a head, now that's a skill, and that's what I think of the kegerator. Let's see. Let's talk to Mike. Mike?
Hey, Adam.
What can't I complain about?
I don't see how you could possibly complain about a beautiful woman that also cooks and cleans.
Well, wow. I would, initially, I would be delighted. And then when we're having sex and a door swings open in the small of her back and some C-cell batteries come flying out and I realize she's a fembot invented in the lab, then I would be horrified and possibly shocked, depending on how rough the trade got in the sack. And how much water-soluble lube was used. I don't believe this woman exists. See, that's the problem. I love it hypothetically. I love it on paper. If you have some sort of computer model for a beautiful woman that does nothing but cook and clean, I'd love to see it.
Every damn night.
My complaint is not that I could complain about a woman who does that. My complaint is I've never met one. Thank you.
Well,
all right,
done.
One last one. Let's talk to Thomas. Thomas?
Yeah?
How say you? Give me your what can't Adam complain about.
Fresh paint on a nice car, a nice paint job.
I'll tell you what I don't like about paint jobs. They vary too much. You know, you pass these signs on the freeway, Earl Shive will paint your car and give you the executive paint with the premier diamond finish polish for $189, and then you bring your nice car in somewhere and you go, how much for a nice paint job? And the guy's like, $6,000. And you're like, what? I could get it done for a price of boots over at the Earl's place. Well, if you want that kind of paint job. It's the same car. You're applying paint to it. How could it change that much? Now, I understand there's a little prep involved, but I don't like the wild fluctuations. I feel the same way about gourds. Yeah. I don't like seeing those miniature decorative pumpkins that weigh an ounce and a half that you use in the centerpiece of your Thanksgiving table, and then the ones that weigh 1,300 pounds and have rocked the pickup truck off its front wheels where the truck is pulling a wheelie. I don't like the wild swings. I wouldn't mind, and thus you don't know when you go in and get your estimate. Anything involving a car, fender work, and paint, you have no idea if it's going to be $300 or $3,000, and that's way too much. You know, when you buy something like milk, if you go to the cheap market, you know it's $2 for a half gallon. If you go to the Gelson's, you know it's going to be $2.75. But it's not like you go to the cheap market and it's $2, and then you go to the Gelson's, and the guy's like, $128. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's too big a swing. So, I like the idea of a car with a fresh coat of candy apple red on it. The crazy swing in the part where I have no idea how much it is and can never question the guy. That part, I resent. Thank you. Oh, man. I can complain about not having enough time to complain about life. We're out of time.
That was What Can't Adam Complain About?
T.
Yes.
The news.
We're going to talk about the Heath Ledger mystery video. Dr. Drew has seen it, and I'm going to tell you what he has to say about it.
Good times. Next on the news.
With No Country for Old Men's Javier Bardem.
He's something bigger than I would ever expect. I'm very happy.
And we'll talk to Flavor Flav.
Yeah, boy!
The same guy. T and the A's man dish out some relationship advice, and we'll recap last night's American Idol.
We all like different flavors of ice cream.
The news with Teresa Strasser.
I heard you call me fat.
Powered by MSN.com. Have you been to MSN today? Stream the Adam Carolla Show. Click on Listen Live at AdamCarolla.com.
I have a hairy ass. I'm not proud of it.
And now, Adam Carolla.
Hey, T-Bone.
Yeah?
Before we get to the news, let me give a plug for our Knight Rider friends. Launch party, Playboy Mansion, that's coming up on the 12th. Go to AdamCarolla.com, register to win. And the movie event, the event of the decade, Knight Rider, two-hour original movie premiering 9 o'clock Sunday, February 17th, only on NBC. Now, T, the news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news today.
Well, how did Heath Ledger obtain prescriptions for the 6 different drugs that killed him? TV Guide is reporting that the DEA is now investigating that question. Meanwhile, the New York Times spoke with a psychiatrist at NYU who has nothing to do with Heath's case. And in his opinion, Heath never should have been taking so many different medications. Most doctors and experts agree on that. This doctor said, quote, 6 different sedative drugs in Heath Ledger's system show something was amiss. Whether that was in taking combinations of drugs without proper medical guidance or sloppy prescribing, it was an unfortunate situation and with a tragic outcome. Dr. Drew was on Larry King Live, and he explains in simple terms how Heath Ledger died.
Basically, he stopped breathing. That's probably all that happened. And the combination of the opiate and the benzodiazepine can stop somebody's breath.
Like going to sleep.
Like going to sleep and not breathing. And he was heard to be snoring, and then all of a sudden the breathing stopped.
Not going to sleep, Larry.
There could have been a cardiac problem, a rhythm problem with his heart superimposed on that, caused maybe by the over-the-counter sleeping aid. Or maybe there were other things that didn't show up on the toxicology. That happens with my patients all the time. But the fact is, he just stopped breathing.
Larry's like going to bed. Yeah, Larry, like going to bed and then not breathing. You know, you understand you breathe while you're asleep. Some people call it snoring. Sometimes the cat will jump on my chest and steal my breath. Yeah.
You have to be careful about that.
Yeah. Look, obviously you can get prescription meds from anyone these days, and I'll bet you a lot of celebrities hand them back and forth.
I would think so.
You're hanging out with the Olsen twins. You want to get a few downers from them. They'll toss you a few.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way it works. And again, the mixing and the matching, that's the dangerous part. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are all talented people, do all talented people have difficulty sleeping?
Well, you've mentioned that the schedule can be very different. The life of an actor, while glamorous in many ways, does require you to be up at weird hours, change time zones a lot.
Well, here's what you want out of life. I mean, here's what you want as far as sleeping goes. Schedule. You just have to get on a schedule.
Right.
If you work at a sawmill and you have to be there at 7 every morning and you've been there for 35 years, or you drive a school bus and your first pickup's at 6:45 in the morning and you're going on year 28 of that, you get on a schedule. And those people don't really have a difficult time sleeping. And if they do, they work it out and then that's it. That's their schedule. They go to bed at 10 o'clock every night. And I would bet you that most of these people just like getting up at exactly the same time every morning probably go to bed within 8 minutes of that set time almost every night. Now, when you have a job where you're traveling internationally and or doing things where when you shoot a movie, you'll be doing days and you'll be doing nights. You'll have 2 months in a row of having to show up on the set at 6 a.m., meaning the car is going to pick you up at 5:15 or 5:30. You'll do 2 months of that, and those will be days. But then you'll shoot nights. And now your call time will be noon, but you won't get out of there until 2 a.m. or whatever the hell it is. You do that, and after a few years of doing that, and then you mix in all the weird creative baggage that goes along with being an artistic person, all the angst, all the introspection, all that kind of stuff. Mix that in. Now a couple of flights back and forth from New York to Perth, and then sprinkle in a little struggling with the limelight. You get home, you have to knock yourself down. You have to tranquilize yourself like you're some kind of elephant out on the Serengeti that's going to be tagged and dragged away to some nature preserve. That's what happens. And everyone says, hey, man, you've been up for 24 hours. Why don't you just go to bed? You can't. You're beaked. You close your eyes, you see flashbulbs popping.
Absolutely. You throw into that mix breakup of a serious relationship, as in the case of Heath Ledger. He broke up with Michelle Williams, the mother of his two-year-old.
Right. And that makes for a combination that a couple of, you know, Sominex is not going to do it. You need to fill your veins with downers, and then you overdo it. And then the problem is you do some of this stuff and you forget what you've done. And then you get inebriated and you get sloppy and you think it'd be a good idea to take another, and that's a death sentence.
Sure, and that's a terrible feeling. I mean, I don't know if you've experienced this. I assume you have. When you're just lying in bed and your mind is just running and you can't stop it, and you know you have to get up early, but you can't stop anxious thoughts from going through your head. I can see the appeal of wanting to put, you know, quiet down those voices.
Yeah. No,
we've all been there.
Absolutely.
You guys have never had insomnia?
No, I've had it. I've had it, you know, basically my whole life. I mean, I've always been a horrible sleeper.
Same.
And, you know, my only or biggest problem is a lot of those nights I would have, I knew I had to get up in an hour and a half to go do Howard Stern. So if I drugged myself, I would still be drugged when I woke up when the alarm went off 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
I had such little time to sleep that I couldn't really drug myself. And I usually had to do something like some form of performance. And I didn't want to be all, let's just say Paula Abdul-y on the air.
Abdul-esque,
right, because I had to tell funny stories, not stories about my latest clamp-on earring line I was going to sell on the QVC.
What? Well, actually, remember when Paula Abdul did the satellite tour? And she was like in and out of frame.
Well, that's the whole thing. The satellite tours start at 4 a.m. which means it's 7 a.m. on the East Coast. But if you're out on the West Coast, you got to do 4 a.m. And that's something to look out for, because if you go out and you have a night and you go out eating, or you go out partying, or you go out whatever, that town car is going to pick you up at 3:30 in the morning, and it's going to take you to some studio in Culver City. And then you're going to do a satellite tour that lasts about 3 or 4 hours. You do 30 radio stations in 3 or 4 hours. Now, if you take yourself some Vicodin or some whatever to knock yourself out that night, you're getting up 3 hours later and getting on TV. You're still high. I did one of those satellite tours once. It's Dr. Drew's favorite story of mine. We used to work out of Culver City, which is sort of right in the middle of Los Angeles. And for those of you who don't know, and of course the satellite studio was literally up the street from where we worked, and it started at 4 a.m. and we got off work at midnight every night. So it was always a major bummer, because I would be leaving the studio and I'd be driving my car at 12:15 at night, passing the satellite studio, going to my house on the other side of town, knowing I was going to have to get up at 3:15 and turn around and go right back to the satellite studio. And when you sit in these satellite studios, you sit there with an earpiece and you stare at a camera. And you start on the East Coast and you work your way to the West Coast, and it's 7 a.m. and you're doing Good Morning Poughkeepsie, and you work your way to Arizona, essentially, is what happens. By the time you get to your 28th or 29th city, and it's about you started 4 a.m. It's about 7:45 now. You're officially punchy. You've slept for 3 hours. You've talked yourself to your mouth is dry. You got nothing else to say. And we were with some bubbly, perky blonde in Arizona, And she was freaked out because it was live morning Arizona TV.
Right.
And we were the bad boys of MTV. And I was the guy who was going to drop a C-bomb
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, you came to rock Good Morning Tulsa.
She's doing Good Morning Scottsdale, and I'm going to drop the C-word, you know. So she was freaked out, and she said to Dr. Drew, now, what do you guys, what's the magic? How does it work with you two? What's the combination? And then she did that thing where she went, now, be careful. Now, we're on live TV. This is family time. This is morning TV. And one of the analogies that I came up with that I always liked was, and I used to say it all the time when people would ask, because I thought it was the most effective. I said, look, Dr. Drew's the medicine, but we can't get the medicine to the kids without me. Like when your dog has to take a pill. You hand the dog your pill, the dog spits the pill out. You take the dog, you mash it in a little, some Gainsburger, you feed to the dog, gets the pill. I said, Drew's the pill, I'm the Gainsburger. That was the story.
Right.
And everyone used to, it painted a nice picture.
Yeah.
People knew what we were talking about at that point. So she's like, now what's your relationship? How does this work? How do you get your message across? And I was like, well, Sherry, you know, you know, when you have a dog and that dog is not, and she's like, oh, okay, this is a morning show. She was totally freaked out. She thought I was going to tell some story about effing a dog or something. I said, no. Listen, when you have a dog and you want to feed that dog, and she was like, oh, okay, all right, this is morning. This is a family friendly, you know, we're live. And then Drew chimed in. And for some reason, Drew trying to talk her down got me angry. And again, I was on City 28 and I'd slept for an hour and 45 minutes. And she, and Drew like chimes in and Drew goes, no. This is a perfectly appropriate story. And I just looked at Drew and I went, hey, you know what? Forget it. And I just sat there and Drew just sat there. And
hey, listen.
We had a nice, hugely uncomfortable, like five Mississippi of whatever. And she said, oh, okay, tell the story. And I said, you know, no, screw it.
I'm time done. To start listening, goddammit.
And I just sat there for the rest of the uncomfortable interview, just not even looking up. And it was done. But F her.
Yeah.
I tried to tell the story three times. She cut me off three times. And the fourth time, I was like, F you, honey.
I'm tired. For that to surface.
I'm tired. I know nobody who watches your show. And by the way, you want to know why celebrities are a-holes when they do these TV shows out of Australia and England and all that kind of stuff? Oh, Hasselhoff seemed loaded when he did the show out of the UK. When you know there's no one you know watching, F it. I knew no one in Scottsdale. Hell, I do stuff in L.A. Nobody I know watches it.
Right.
Why should they be watching in Scottsdale?
You tried. You gave it a chance.
I gave it a try, and then I just said, forget it. Drew loved that, by the way. I don't know why.
It is kind of amusing. And I do hope that surfaces on YouTube.
It would be nice.
I know you love your entertainment shows, and you may have seen E.T. was promoting this video of Heath
Danny
Ledger.
Danny Lynn?
No.
They took her to the grave.
They did, exclusively. They had the exclusive scoop.
And they explored the room that Anna Nicole died in, too.
They were the only ones.
They had an exclusive.
Did they get in the death fridge?
I haven't
heard that in a while.
I don't know. Danny Lynn, she misses her mommy.
Oh, yeah. So you put a black bow in her hair to visit the grave.
Bow. Yeah.
My favorite part of that. Well, E.T. was promoting a story in which they were going to show this video of Heath Ledger, which was allegedly made 2 years ago at the hotel where actor John Belushi died, the Chateau Marmont, which is in Hollywood.
You want to know the scary thing about that whole, the most tragic thing about the whole Anna Nicole, Danny Lynn, the whole thing? You want to know the most tragic part of that story is Larry Birkhead gets more ass than any of us could ever dream of getting. That sack with the frosted tips who drags his kid around and parades him in front of the TV cameras and does the exclusives, he'll get more tail, second probably only to the Menendez brothers.
Ugh.
Okay, guys, single guys, now it's time for us to officially kill ourselves in a big Jonestown-type pack, because the first tail grabbers, those are the two guys who killed their parents. They're in permanent lockdown. Those guys, number one on the single man's hit parade, number two, Birkhead.
Ugh.
Meanwhile, there are thousands of hardworking, horny guys who have their crappy computer jobs who masturbate and cry every night.
Having sex with Larry Birkhead is a crime against humanity and should be prosecuted.
I agree, but I guarantee you that guy has zero difficulty getting dates. That's how pathetic you women are. You make me sick.
Anyway, back to Heath Ledger.
No, I'm talking to you, T.
That's what I figured.
Okay.
I tried to ignore it.
Heath.
This video excerpts were shown widely on Australian TV on Thursday. Well, then E.T. decides that this is in bad taste and that they're not going to show it, but some people had already seen it. Now, in the video, he is not shown taking drugs, although others can be seen in grainy footage apparently snorting
a substance. Hold on. Did Larry take Danny Lynn to Heath Ledger's grave? Because while they're in Aruba visiting mom's grave, they ought to swing by Perth.
He takes her on a graveyard tour to Natalie Holloway's watery tomb.
Hey. Yeah.
Next on E.T.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, and here's Stalin's tomb over here. That's awesome.
This Hitler's bunker.
This is the eternal flame over here in Washington. Who else died?
Well, Danny Lynn takes a special trip to Auschwitz.
Oh,
you
know, great.
To visit that.
Great. Awesome. Hey, these are the trains. They would bring the Jews in little Danny Lynn. There's a second. Put a black bow, second black bow to commemorate that.
He's got a whole drawer full of black bows and little black dresses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Larry Burkhead will bring her to Ledger's funeral.
Sure. E.T. will pick up the travel expenses.
Yeah, first class all the way.
They're doing the Lord's work.
So in this video, he's not shown taking drugs. Others can be seen apparently snorting a substance off the table. And he is heard saying, "I'm going to get serious S from my girlfriend." That, of course, was his wife. Asked by someone why, he says, "We had a baby 3 months ago." He goes on to tell the person his daughter's name and then says, "I shouldn't be here at all." Well, Dr. Drew actually saw this video, and here he is talking about it with Larry King.
You see this man's anguish and conflict at being in an environment where he's doing drugs, talking about his extensive drug history in that environment.
Is this pills?
He talks about, I'm not really comfortable telling you exactly what he said until people are ready to issue this tape, but he was talking about an extensive history. Now, whether that was just bravado or reality, and he seemed to be intoxicated in this video with very, very serious narcotics medication. The fact is, though, this is someone who was in deep anguish when he's doing this, and you see his profound conflict at knowing his daughter and his wife are upstairs. He keeps saying, "I shouldn't be here. This is terrible." I mean, he really is struggling, and it is so painful.
Hmm.
Yeah, Dr. Drew then goes on to talk about the secrecy that surrounds a lot of this drug use.
Hold on, I just got this off the internet. Burkhead's going to pick up Heath Ledger's kid and bring them by the grave, too.
Oh, Matilda?
Yeah, he's going to drive the hearse by the house there.
Matching black bows?
He drives the car that Grandpa Al drove in the Munsters.
Mm-hmm.
He'll pull the coffin by.
Little chick magnet.
Well, I've tried desperately to make this a Britney-free newscast, so I'll just say this.
Oh, no.
Spears was released from the psych ward at UCLA Medical Center yesterday, a week after she was involuntarily admitted, and more than a week before she was supposed to be released. Britney was basically snuck off the premises just before noon, aided by a private security detail. There were also some members of the LAPD on hand. By the way, police used the code name Karen this time. Last time, you remember, she was the package.
Right.
Now,
good name for TSV.
Now she's Karen. And by the way, we talked about Delta Burke. Mm-hmm. Checking into rehab for hoarding.
Yeah.
Now, Star Tabloid is reporting that Kirsten Dunst has checked into the Cirque Lodge Rehab Clinic in Utah. That's where Lindsay Lohan and Richie Sambora were recently treated, and Eva Mendez is there now.
So, look, is there something being put in Avion that is driving all the celebrities insane? What's going on?
Well, you painted a pretty good picture.
What, did a earlier. Bad load of tuna come in from Japan and all the sushi's tainted or something? What is going on with the celebrities? I'll tell you what's going on. No schedule makes Jack a dull boy.
Yeah.
You start going wacko. You get cabin fever. This is what happens. Celebrities don't have schedules, not these celebrities. They're
right.
Busy and then there's nothing. They do what athletes do. One minute they're in the Super Bowl. The next minute they're just staring at the ceiling of their bad apartment wondering what happened to the last 10 years and they freak out.
Sure, and one could also argue that the personality type who's drawn to be in the limelight, that was probably a lonely kid to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And getting famous didn't necessarily make it better.
Right. I feel like the world's sanest person every time you open up the newspaper. But, yeah, the celebs don't have schedules. Now, the TV celebs have schedules. And when you host a game show, you don't get to go nuts because you have to be somewhere
right.
every day at 10 a.m. and host your game show. But when you're doing a movie or two a year, well, that means you have 6 months off every year, and you can go insane.
And
that's
Burke's
what's
case,
happening.
She might have had a decade off.
She took about 10 years off, and plus, she's got Major Dad yelling at her all the
time. Right, I know. Yeah, lack of structure can be a trouble.
All right.
I will leave you with this last story. You might be wondering what happened to all that Patriots merchandise.
Now, you say she's been hoarding.
Yeah, pack rat.
In her cheeks? Or she have a storage facility?
Well, when you're an obsessive hoarder, you hoard everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Plus, assume.
Yeah, it can be easily misconstrued, by the way. I've done that when I announced to my wife, where are you going? I'm going out hoarding. I'll be back in a few. You got to be careful. You got to really hit the D.
Right.
You really nail that D.
Yeah, you don't want to say, I'm depressed and I checked into the mental hospital for whoring.
Right. Last one, T. Bring it home because we have Javier Bardem.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll make this very quick. The Patriots merchandise that was printed up before Sunday, you know all those T-shirts that said 19-0?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with them?
Well, they get donated to underprivileged children in other countries, I do believe.
That's exactly right. An organization called World Vision will distribute that merchandise to impoverished kids in third world countries. The kids will also get some gear, which has the Green Bay Packers and the San Diego Chargers as conference champions.
Listen, we have that out here. Every Mexican day laborer I've ever worked with had a shirt that said, like, Foxy Senior Citizen on it, and was a 28-year-old guy from Nicaragua, or a shirt that said, like, Cal Jam 79. I was there, and the guy's 18 years old. That's what happens.
World's best aunt.
Making bacon, the two pigs humping.
Right.
I worked with a guy. I offered him $10 to buy the shirt off his back. He was too proud.
For the making bacon?
Yep. Then I said 24 oral, and he said, where should I start?
Done. I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news powered by MSN.com. Have you gone to MSN today?
Tomorrow's news, today. Teresa Strasser.
No Country for Old Men was one of the most impressive films of the year, and I would say, well, 5 years from now, if you ask me, best of the last 5 years, I would put that on the top. I don't know that there's been anything better made since 2000, and if you ask me what that film was, I wouldn't come up with it either. I enjoyed this more than Gladiator. Yes. I thoroughly enjoyed this, and I thought Javier Bardem's acting job in this thing was head and shoulders above even other great performances of the year. So we'll talk to him next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show from No Country for Old Men.
What's the most you ever lost on a coin toss?
I don't know. I couldn't say.
Call it.
Call it, yes. I didn't put nothing up.
Yes, you're dead. You've been putting it up your whole life. You just didn't know it. You know what date is on this coin?
No.
1958. It's been traveling 22 years to get here. And now it's here. And it's either heads or tails.
Oscar-nominated Javier Bardem on The Adam Carolla Show.
Javier?
Hello?
Good to speak to you.
Hey, good to speak to you.
I'm Adam Carolla, and that's Teresa Strasser.
Hi, Javier.
Hello, how are you?
Thanks for freaking me out. No Country for Old Men.
I'm sorry.
I got to tell you, I was so impressed by that movie and your performance in it. I'm a huge fan. And for me, it was the best movie of the year. And you definitely, well, I would say you probably could get best actor of the year instead of supporting actor. But either way, and I know you guys are superstitious, but I'm going to jinx it and say you will win for sure. There's nobody that came close to that performance this year.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say. For me, it's kind of weird. And, of course, a great honor to belong to the same category that these gigantic actors that I admire so much, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, Hal Holbrook, whose performance in Into the Wild, I think it's brilliant. And Tom Wilkinson, Casey Affleck. I mean, I'm just an Spanish actor who speaks a foreign language. So for me to be included among these amazing actors is like a dream. Really.
Well, listen, those hacks did a decent job this year, but you did a great job, Javier, and that's why you're going to win. And I must admit something. I didn't know the movie was a period piece until that scene when you were in the convenience store with the guy saying that the coin had traveled for 20 years. I just thought you had a bad haircut. And everyone drove old pickup trucks. I couldn't tell. I thought it was the present day.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, it's around the 80s, no? That's where the novel is based, and I think they did a good job with it because it looks really real.
Well, you know, the thing about most movies that have that are period pieces, they play music from that year. Yeah. But if you think about it, when you're driving around, you're not listening to music from 08. You're listening to music from the 90s. You're listening to the Beach Boys. You're listening to Madonna or whoever. They always kind of make that mistake. They play all the songs that were from that month of that year. So they didn't do it in this movie. I do love the Coen brothers. But you said the book, you said it was a novel before it was a movie. I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I don't see my character, Anton Chigurh, listening Madonna into a car.
That's a good point.
That would be really scary.
He's too evil. Cormac McCarthy wrote the novel, right?
Yeah, great author. I wasn't familiar with him before I read the script, and then I went to the novel, and I read it several times, actually. And I think it's a great, great book, and, of course, a brilliant writer.
And we're speaking to Javier Bardem, by the way, who I believe will win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for No Country for Old Men. Javier, when you read the script, how outlined or how defined was your character, and then how much did you bring to it? You know, how does that work?
Well, the character was really wide open to any kind of interpretation, especially physically, because not even in the book is especially described physically. So that's why the coins came out with the idea of the haircut, which I thought it was brilliant, and all of that. And the three of us, the coins and I, the only thing we try to achieve is to try to bring this symbolic idea of what the character represents, which is this symbolic idea, this icon figure of violence, into a human behavior. And that's kind of behind the page. That's kind of behind any dialogue or actions. Because in the page, you just see a man walking around and killing people. But you have to bring that thing into the character, into his physicality, actually.
Were you a fan of the Coen brothers? Did you like Fargo and things like that beforehand?
Well, the funny thing is Spain, the country where I'm from and where I live, is one of the countries where most people see Coen Brothers movies. And yes, I am a huge fan. Yeah, I am a huge fan since I saw Blood Simple.
Yeah.
Huge fan. And that's why it was like kind of a dream for me to have worked with him.
Yeah, so you were excited to work with the Coen Brothers.
Totally.
Yeah, Blood Simple was great. I especially love Fargo.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they do to bring out the performances in people, but they seem to.
Javier, the vocalization of the character, to me, was the thing that made him the scariest.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with the voice you used?
I don't know. It came out, I guess I was working really hard with a dialogue coach, Howard Stern, great dialogue coach. And I was trying to find the voice. And then one day, yes, appeared. And I said, I think this is the right voice because it's kind of cold, kind of almost mechanical, like no feeling involved, which is something that we tried to find, and we finally find it.
Well, it's interesting, you know, a lot of movies and a lot of directors and writers try to create a villain that is maniacal and seems to be evil and love killing, but a scarier guy is a guy who doesn't think about killing, he just kills. Which was Javier's character, and that's what was so bone-chilling about it.
And you throw in that haircut.
You throw in the bowl cut and the bone-chilling, and then, of course, I don't want to give away too much, but the cattle stunner, the pneumatic cattle stunner, that was a stroke of brilliance. Was that in the book, or did one of you or the Coen brothers come up with that?
No, that was in the book, and actually I think the movie is very loyal to the book itself. And yes, that cattle gun was Cormac McCarthy's idea.
And, yeah. And what about the ending? Now, there's a lot of discussion, debate, and whatever of did we miss something, or was there a twist that I wasn't good enough to pick up on, or was it just a cool Coen Brothers non-ending ending? Is there something the public has missed? Are we confused about it, or is it just what it is?
I think it's just what it is. And I think, in my humble opinion, is what makes the difference between a great movie and a classic, which is to be brave enough in these days to bring a kind of open ending for every viewer to have their own opinion and their own thoughts about it, rather mm-hmm. than being manipulated by the director's ideas or statements.
Well,
I think that's what the Coens brought to this movie that makes this movie different.
I had an idea, which was I was saying to somebody who was trying to figure out what the ending was, I said, well, it's to you, it's an ending, but to Tommy Lee Jones's character, he's still alive. He's yeah. continuing his life. It's just we run out of time with him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, when movies end, it's as if the person ended. And this movie was so realistic that I have the feeling that Tommy Lee Jones is still doing something somewhere.
Yeah, he's
somewhere
having coffee with his wife.
As wearing a sheriff hat, you know? So it was like, well, we gave you 2 hours and 10 minutes of Tommy Lee Jones's life, and now it's time for us to leave, but he's going to go on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Also,
I guess his point of view at the very end is the point of view of all of us, which is to say, there is something that I saw, that I witnessed, and that I feel I cannot stop. And how do I live with that, with the impossibility of being able to stop the unstoppable, which in this case is violence itself.
Right.
Well, Javier Bardem, I am a huge fan of the movie and, of course, your performance. And, again, if there's as sure as I knew the Patriots were going to win the Super Bowl, I know Javier Bardem is going to walk home with that Oscar.
Well, thank you very much.
Wishing you best of luck and thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Javier. What a gentleman. And, by the way, for me this year, it's Good Luck, Chuck, then No Country for Old Men, and then everything else is just a distant third.
I agree. That Good Luck, Chuck, is misunderstood.
Yeah. Oh, yes. History will be very kind to that. Look, people, if you haven't seen No Country for Old Men, go see it.
Oh, my. It's so good. The ending, it took me a while, and then I realized, to me, it's good versus evil, and good just gets exhausted.
It doesn't even, way to put it. The other thing is don't even get mired in the ending. Just sit and enjoy. Just experience.
Excellent storytelling.
It just the Coen brothers are just a head and shoulders above everyone else. Everything is interesting. You watch a Coen brothers movie, and you see Josh Brolin get out of a pickup truck and walk to his trailer, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where'd you get that? At the Getting Place.
We'll take ourselves a break. Speaking of interesting, Norm MacDonald, one of my favorites. Norm MacDonald. And you know what? I would say your favorites as well. Norm MacDonald in studio next.
Interested.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Welcome back to Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yeah, check out the podium. Look at this.
Mr. Reynolds has apparently changed his name to Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, that's right. Turd Ferguson. It's a funny name.
This is the sound a doggy makes. Burt Reynolds.
That's not my name.
Okay. Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, what do you want?
Norm MacDonald is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Everybody loves Norm MacDonald. Every comedian I ever talk to, whenever Norm's name comes up, goes, wow, yeah, he's funny. And then they pause and they go, it's a shame.
That guy sounds hot. Why do you do that?
The general consensus is Norm, funniest guy on the planet.
I was listening to Javier earlier.
Right, yeah. Bardem.
What?
Yeah, Javier Bardem.
You know, really cares about his last name.
That's
sorry.
True.
But no, he was saying, like, this is a little pet peeve of mine, where he's saying, like, how the endings can be ambiguous to movies.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that more than anything.
You like an ending?
Yeah, and the worst one was Lost in Translation. Did you ever see that?
Yes.
He whispers to her, and you don't know what he says, and you're supposed to guess.
I know, and I'm guessing he didn't really actually say anything.
Right, exactly. The screenwriters had nothing to say.
No, you know what he probably whispered? Can you believe this slow funeral dirge is going to be nominated for Best Original Screenplay? This bore fest is going to be nominated? I can't believe it.
I've heard that it was just one word, and he whispered into her ear, suckers.
That movie made me angry because I thought it was well shot and it looked interesting, but watching Bill Murray slip into a coma for 97 minutes does not make Best Original Screenplay.
Is that what, did it win?
It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Wow.
I don't think it won.
I don't either,
but it was definitely nominated.
I'm pretty sure it did win, but I'll find out.
Wait, yeah. Did you not like There Will Be Blood?
I just saw that. What did you think, Norm?
I bump both those guys.
Javier's got stiff competition, though. Hal Holbrook, Into the Wild.
Holbrook?
Good. How dare you?
What? Hal Holbrook?
He's a distinguished actor.
He died in 89.
He's still alive. He's very
He's
much alive.
He's not working anymore.
You know, he got pistol whipped in Hancock Park where he lived.
Really?
Yeah, him and his wife, Dixie Carter.
Yeah.
They got apparently Hancock Park is right on the
border
of a dangerous area.
Yeah, that's the area where I used to live.
Oh, it is. So it's a dangerous area,
Koreatown.
Right?
Well, she actually lived in the dangerous
these weren't
area.
Koreans, I'll tell you that. That broke into his house.
They
broke into his house, held him hostage. Him and Delta Burke. And pistol whipped him.
It wasn't Delta Burke.
I mean Dixie Carter.
Right. They were both designing women, so I see where Norm's coming from.
Yeah, Dixie Carter.
Meshach Taylor ran in at the last minute and saved the day with a fruity vest.
Annie Potts was very upset about the whole thing.
And by the way, if those of you who aren't from this area, you know, pistol whipped in Hancock Park sounds like some threat a cop's going to make to you when he's going to toss you in the hole with the gay guys. Listen, Brewster, you keep this up and you'll be pistol whipped in Hancock Park, all right? I'll hear your screams coming down the hall. Oh, you won't sit for a week, my brother, when you pistol whipped in Hancock Park. Yeah, Hancock Park is
sounds like something Joran Vandersloot might do.
It does. That's the most evil name in a while.
Except, yeah, it is. It is evil, isn't it? Especially when Patrick says it.
Somebody, by the way, like when you hear Joran Vandersloot call the chick he dragged out to the ocean because she passed out from booze on the sand a slut or a bitch. It makes me want to pull his parents aside and go, look, Missy, come over here, drop your underpants. I'm going to need to take this Duraflame log and wedge it into you so that you can never procreate again. You guys are officially the worst parents on the planet. Like, and they'll be like, what about the inner city kids that shoot at the chicks behind the counter at the Korean market? Yeah, but they want money.
Right.
Your son does it for sport.
The Vandersloots had to have been pretty bad parents.
I don't know. I think he just made it all up. Because to me, the frightening guy was Patrick.
Which one?
Patrick was the guy that talked to Joran and got
He was the guy who answered the phone.
The sting.
Hey, why don't you be Joran and I'll be Patrick, right? Because the phone call came at like 1 a.m. Patrick's just sitting around watching a little YouTube and blowing a spleef. He's like, hello?
Oh, we're playing a game?
Yeah. It's called improv.
Wait a minute.
Please try your call again later.
Hello?
Wait, they were in a van. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Joran, or Jorn, or what? Yeah. Vandersloot.
Yeah, Vandersloot.
He takes the chick down to the beach.
No, I'm not Patrick is the guy in the van.
There was a sting, and he befriended
Joran. Oh, that guy.
Record him.
Oh, he's not the worst guy in the world. The worst guy in the world is the guy who answered the phone because he walked to a payphone.
Yeah, that helped him out, you mean?
And he was like, hey, it's 12:45 at night, and this high schooler's passed out on the beach. I need your help,
I can
buddy.
Do that. Okay, I'll
all right,
do
you want to do that?
Okay.
So you be Vandersloot. I'll be the guy.
Wait, I thought I was.
Yeah, you're Vandersloot.
But earlier, you were Vandersloot.
No, you were Vandersloot. No, you call me.
Okay, I'll be Vandersloot.
Yeah, now you're at a payphone outside of Marriott. The chick has just fallen asleep on the beach.
Yeah.
And I'm just hanging out watching TV.
Yeah.
All right,
what's your
go.
Name again? Dory.
He's got a weird name, like Dory. Yeah. Right. I let it ring a little bit because I don't want you to think I'm desperate. Plus, it's late. I shouldn't even be up. Huh? One more time. Hello?
Dowry, is this you?
Hey, Vandersloot, what's happening?
Hey, listen, buddy, I'm in some trouble, man.
What's up?
I'm calling you from a payphone. I realize it's year 2006.
What, do you need to borrow some money or something? What happened to that cell phone? Anyway, what do you need? You need to borrow 20 spot?
Now, this is the thing, man.
What'd you do, vomit on your shirt or something? You need a new shirt?
No, I met a hot lady.
All right.
Yeah, down at the casino.
Uh-huh.
And I brought her to a remote section of the beach. You know how I work.
Right. I know your M.O.
Yeah.
What, do you need a condom or a roof? Or something?
No, I already have those. I've already used those.
Oh, okay.
The thing is, I mean, this girl wanted it bad.
Yeah, cool. You know what do you need, a towel or something?
Nah, that's not it. You remember that boat you had?
We need some water-soluble lube.
No.
Yeah,
it's over with.
Oh, okay. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I got a boat. What of it?
I was wondering if I could borrow it for a while.
Why? What do you want me to do with the boat?
Well, she may be dead or in a coma.
Right.
And I was thinking we throw her in the chuck.
Oh, so we toss her in the boat? And drive her to a hospital?
No, what about the ocean? The bottom of the ocean?
Floating hospital? Davy Jones Locker?
Davy Jones Locker.
Wow, you're a 20-year-old guy who knows that reference, but yet no cell phone. Interesting dichotomy. So let me get this straight. You met a chick at Carlos and Pepe's.
Yeah, she was hot. I did a jello shot off her belly.
You did a jello shot. You dropped a digit on her on the beach, and now you want me to drag her into the ocean and throw her in because she's passed out?
Yeah, but I don't want to go. I don't want to go with
you.
Is it cool if I don't go with you?
So hold on a second. Because a minute ago I was watching The Honeymooners and enjoying a Zima. Now you want me to get up, pop on the hirachis, head down to the beach?
Yeah.
Are you going to help me load her onto the boat?
No, I got to get home.
Okay, so let me just digest this for a second. She may or may not be dead.
She will be, though.
Okay, but as of now, she may still have a pulse.
Yeah, I can't tell.
Okay, so you want me to swing by, but you won't be there, and then I should grab her and drag her across the sand and then toss her onto my boat and then drag her a couple kilometers off the shore and then dump her in the ocean and then go back home, and you're going to be where?
And what you do with her before that's up to you.
None of your beeswax.
Yeah, between two consenting adults, I don't care.
I think they call it a perk in the business. But, all right, and you're going to be doing what while I do this?
I'm going to be going home. They got a honeymooners, marathon.
Okay, so you're not going to help me roll the corpse into my boat or anything?
I don't got that kind of time, man.
Okay.
I'm a little spent.
All right, buddy. So which lifeguard station would she be at?
She's just by the payphone.
Okay. She's by the payphone?
She's under a mangrove tree.
Oh, there's none of them in Aruba. I'll go to the one place where there's a mangrove tree. Awesome. All right, buddy. But hey, listen. Next time we go out to breakfast, you're buying.
This has been a wonderful reenactment.
I was never more angry in my life because I call one of my buddies and like, hey, dude, I need a ride to the airport. F you. It's only Burbank. F off. Well, Christ, you live right by me. Suck it. Well, Jesus, right on the way to work. No way. Well, goddamn, I'm leasing you the car. I don't care. This guy's the world's greatest friend, isn't he?
He is a good friend.
In some ways.
Good Lord.
Oh, wait a minute. Flavor Flav is on the phone. Holy Christ.
Hey, really?
Yeah, Flavor Flav.
Yo, yo, yo.
I'm sorry you had to wait through that reenactment.
I saw Flavor Flav one time at an airport. I got to tell you, man, that guy is the most popular guy I've ever seen in my life.
It's funny because usually flies under the radar. I was amazed that you'd be able to recognize him.
He had a casual look going.
It was
on the
clock?
Way to Vegas. Yeah, he had a casual clock. And all he was on his phone with his agents going, listen, I don't want to screw this up.
Hey,
you remember that, Flav?
That's Norm McDonald, by the way, Flav.
Yo, what's going on? Good morning to y'all. What's poppin'?
I don't know.
Are you a big Norm McDonald fan, Flav?
Huh?
There's that thing you can loop forever.
Comedian Norm MacDonald used to do Weekend Update on SNL.
Oh, yo, definitely, definitely. That.
I know, Tracy you know, Morgan.
One of my biggest spots. Me? Oh, yo, man, one of my biggest shows ever, man. Always love Saturday Night Live. Yo, Norm, what's up?
How you doing, Flav?
No, hey, good, baby boy. How you doing,
man? What?
I was just telling these guys I saw you once in an airport in L.A. going to Vegas, and I thought you were the most popular guy I've ever seen. You were just mobbed for photos.
Thank you, man. You know what I mean? Hey, listen, man, it's the people that made me who I am, man. I just thank them back. You know what I'm saying? I ain't popular like you, though, man. You always kept Saturday Night Live, kid.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly, Bobby.
That's right. He was so popular, they fired his ass in 97.
That's big.
Some say for being too funny.
Hey, I saw your girlfriend on Celebrity Rehab, your ex-girlfriend.
Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I heard she was on Celebrity Rehab doing a thing. And not only that, but I heard she really cleaned herself up nice, and I heard she's doing good right now.
Well, that's a sobering thought, you waking up next to Flava Flav.
That's a good sobering thought right there, man. Word up, man.
Flava, can I ask you this?
That's hitting bottom in a whole different way.
Was that a made-up TV relationship, or were you two ever really in love?
Nah, me and Bridget was real with that there, buddy. That was real. That was the one for the Gipper, baby.
Well, what went wrong between you two?
Huh?
What went wrong between you and Bridget?
Well, the thing that went wrong, nothing really went wrong with us. It's just that, you know, she had a family back in Italy, you know what I mean? And, you know, life would be difficult, you know what I'm saying, to try to stay a pair while she's way over there and I'm way over here.
Well,
that's for her to go back to family.
Also,
you know?
Flava's mistress
that,
is a C.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Now, too, you know, she married Batia. They're happily married, and I'm real happy for my pal, man. Me and Bridget Nielsen are going to always be the best
she
of
friends.
She
seems like a very sweet woman.
She is, man. She definitely is. And we're going to always be the best of friends no matter what.
Now, are you going to find yourself a new gal pal and a Flavor of Love coming up now? Premiering, by the way, Monday, February 11th, I should say, on VH1. Yes, how's the crop look this year?
Let me tell you, this season is definitely going to be bananas.
And what percentage of the women do you have sex with, Flava?
None of them on my show.
Oh, you don't have sex with any of the ones on your show?
I don't know them like that. I love me, man. You know what I mean? It's not about me having sex on the show. It's about me finding companionship and finding the person that's right for me. You know what I mean?
I think he's saying he doesn't have sex on camera.
Yeah.
I see.
What kind of girl are you looking
for? Funny.
Blave, what kind of girl are you looking for this season?
Well, honestly, I'm looking for a girl that, you know, that's fun, you know what I'm saying? That has a good sense of humor, that has time for me, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, she's got to have good motherly instincts, you know, she's got to be able to have that good housewife instinct as well, you know what I'm saying? But you just got to be a lot like Flav, man.
I'm trying to think, like, what year Rocky IV came out, and it was probably about the same time that Public Enemy's first big song came out, or first big record came out. I think that must have been, what, 86, 87?
Public Enemy, we came out really in, like the end of 86, beginning of 87.
That's why I wish I had a time machine, because I'd show a Public Enemy video, and then I'd show Rocky IV, and I'd go, see that guy with the clock? You see her, the Russian chick? They're going to be together in 20 short years.
You could make a lot of money.
I'd make a lot of bets. I could really clean up in Vegas, yeah.
That was crazy.
Well, Flava...
I ain't going to lie, though. One thing that I can say about Flav and Bridget Nielsen, we definitely, definitely brought good entertainment to television.
Yes. Heartwarming family entertainment. Hey, Flavor of Love, third season tonight, or I should say Monday night, February 11th, 9 p.m., VH1. We'll be watching. And Flava, come in studio. Would you next time, please?
I'd love to come in the studio one morning and just hang out with you guys for the whole morning.
Thank you, and we'll be watching on February 11th.
Thank you, guys, and thanks for having me on your show this morning.
Good times, Flava.
By the way, we should say Norm was just talking about Vegas. He's going to be there tomorrow night at the Mandalay Bay.
Ah, yes.
Doing a show, 8 p.m.
House of Blues, everybody.
I love the Celebrity Rehab show.
Oh, I can't stop watching it.
It's amazing.
It's phenomenal.
But I wish, like, the celebrities weren't, you know, like, they hadn't, most of them haven't worked for 25 years. Like, I think it would be better if they got celebrities now that were celebrities working, and you could save them before, you know what I'm saying?
Before it
hurt their career.
Late. Right.
Right. Yeah. Except for they won't do that because they think it'll hurt their career. But I know we talk about it all the time where people go, oh, Dancing with the Stars or Celebrity Rehab or Celebrity This or Stars That. And then everyone goes, those aren't stars. Those aren't celebrities. But who'd you think you were really going to get? You think you're getting Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe to be in Celebrity Dunk Tank? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like they do this, like, we take celebrities, we put them on an island, and then we sexually humiliate them for 9 weeks.
And Tom Cruise didn't
and then everyone complains. Like, they go, oh, you got the chick from Growing Pains? Come on. Who did you think you were going to get? Sir Laurence Olivier?
Yeah, you're right.
Do you get offered any of these reality shows?
One time I did, yeah.
Which
Michael
one?
Caine That's is going to be on this show.
When you know your career is in trouble.
Which one were you offered?
It was the craziest one. It was called the Celebrity Police Officers or something.
Oh, I remember that. Eric Estrada was on it.
It was the weirdest.
And,
they
told
me, they said, you get to be a policeman with a real gun. And I was like, what? That sounded crazy.
And some celebrity's going to get killed because this sort of thing where it's like, hey, yeah, you and Arnold from Different Strokes are going to go on a raid of a crack house.
Yeah.
Here's a 9mm pistol.
You know where it became pathetic was there was this thing, Celebrity Island or something like that. But
now, I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. Was
Celebrity
one
Get
of
Me
things.
Out of Here. Yeah, yeah, that wasn't the one, though. It was Celebrity Island. I don't know. Kathy Griffin was on it.
Yeah, yeah. But it was The Mole.
The Mole.
But it was the first one where the celebrities actually won money. Like, it usually goes to charity or something.
Right.
But they actually won like $100,000 at the end of it.
Norm MacDonald, I think Kathy did win that. Norm MacDonald's in studio. House of Blues is where you can find him at the Mandalay Bay Friday.
You're friends with Dr. Drew. I'd love to see one of my favorite actors from the 70s on Celebrity Rehab. I hope he's still alive. But I love Jan Michael Vincent. That guy sounds hot.
I think he's still with us.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a problem with substance abuse. Him and Gary Busey are at the gym all day, and then they're over at the juice bar. What are you talking about? Yeah, we'll talk about that with Norm MacDonald next. Favorites, but a fan favorite.
Yeah, look at the phone lines.
House of Blues at Mandalay Bay. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think if you like me, then you'll love Norm MacDonald. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like one of those restaurants you know your friend is going to like because you know the other restaurants they like.
Would you two ever collaborate on a project?
Oh, man. Yeah, man, sure.
Seems redundant, but yeah. People think I'm Norm anyway. They're like, right. You're like a less funny Norm MacDonald.
I know, I get the same thing.
You both played Def on Family Guy?
Yeah. People are always saying, say hi to Jimmy. I don't correct.
Let's see. Josh.
Yeah.
You're 20. You'd like to heap some praise on Norm MacDonald?
Yes, sir. Huge fan of the show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I tried to call in a few times. Excited to get through and talk to Norm, though. What's up, Norm?
What's up, Josh?
Dude, you have got to be, if not the funniest person on the planet, then at least the funniest person they've ever had on SNL.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks, man.
Certainly the funniest newscaster on SNL.
What's your question?
I love Norm's news.
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, between, like, I don't know, the new guys just can't even compete.
What's your question? No. That's what Larry King always said.
That was pretty good, Larry King.
I know.
You know what I like about Larry King? Like, he's so, like, jaded by everything. Like, he's seen everything, you know? So he'll just say the most blunt, like, things. He doesn't mean to be rude, but, like, I saw him once, there was a woman on, she'd lost her child. You know, her child had been killed. And he goes,
sorry, funny.
He goes, you never get over it, do you? Paul Newman told me that. You never get over it. He's just like...
I like when he mispronounces things. I like when he's like, we got Madonna on the line. She's talking about her daughter, Lourdes.
I notice people rarely correct him.
I know. It's like, it's Lordess, Your Highness. It's not Lords.
I thought he was really old. Like, some guys look really old. He's only 72.
Well, I had an idea yesterday, and I think this would make a great pay-per-view event. Norm, you tell me. Maybe this will be our first project. We'll host it. I wanted to get Larry King and Carol Channing together. They forced them to have sex, and then we would gamble on who broke first.
Who would you take? You're a gambling man, Norm.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. They look so fragile.
One of those competitions, you know those motor oil commercials where they take the two cars and they fire them up and they let them both run on dynamometers until one just blows a gasket?
Yeah, you'd celebrity bet. Sex match.
Yeah, who broke a hip? Who had a
now,
heart
Carol
attack?
Carol Channing would be much older than Larry King.
Yeah.
She would, but yet I would argue doesn't have to work as hard sexually.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who's been with her would attest to that.
And you rarely hear about women having heart attacks and dying during sex.
It's always the guy. It's always the big fat boss man that dies when he's on his secretary. So, I don't know what the money would be. Probably even money. Plus, Larry would have to still wear his suspenders, but attached to his pubic hair.
Ugh.
That would be awesome, which would then pull his penis up over his head.
Do a lot of guys, I wonder, because, a guy wanted me one time, my friend said, you should take Viagra just for fun. And I said I would never do that because of the heart thing.
Like, right.
I'd be freaked out about having a heart attack. So I wonder how old guys, I would be so freaked out about a heart attack.
About Viagra.
Yeah.
Well, Larry,
sometimes even at... After sex, I'm like, whoa, or during sex, I'm like, holy Lord, what if I have a heart attack, even regularly?
Right, without the Viagra.
Yeah, if I start sweating or,
That doesn't kill the mood at all, you thinking about dying in the middle
of it? I go, I gotta go to the bathroom, and then I, go in and put cold water and go, hey, we gotta quit.
I've had that if you replace heart attack with Sports Center. I've been like, what if I miss, hey, John?
Yes.
Norm inspired you?
Yes, he did. I'm from Sacramento, and I rarely get to L.A., but I do stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I was on this little show, a showcase at the Hollywood Improv on a Sunday night.
Right.
And 5 minutes before...
That's called open mic.
Yeah, open mic, okay.
Right, it's not a showcase.
I call it the showcase to everyone in Sacramento.
So show.
They won't know the difference.
Let me explain what they do in showcases. They don't hit you with a flashlight after 3 minutes and have a short, frustrated comedian scream, I will shut the effing power off to this building if you tell one more goddamn joke after I hit you with that flashlight. Now you have 3 minutes, and be funny. No one wants to hear stories.
Okay.
That's not normally what we'd call, if I was showcasing an automobile, I wouldn't roll it and then park it in the back of the parking lot and have my dog defecate on it.
So, John, you were at open mic night.
Yes, open mic night. 5 minutes before I go on, the promoter goes, hey, cut your set short because Norm MacDonald's here. And then I almost peed on myself because Norm MacDonald is just huge in my comedy life. I mean, I've followed his career, love everything he's done. Mm-hmm. And so I went on. And as I was getting off stage, Norm, I just looked over and saw a handout, and he said, you're very funny. That was very funny. And then I skipped back to my seat and cried in the corner for a half hour.
So it was Norm saying you were very funny?
Yes. And just to hear that, keeps me going.
John, can you tell one of the jokes you told?
Sure. All right.
And by the way, I don't want to ruin it for you, but... That's how Norm, when you hand him a cocktail, he goes, very funny, very funny. And when the cab driver picks him up and goes, where to? He goes, very, very funny. It's very funny. So he just said that. I just walked in the studio and said that to Angie. She asked Norm if he wanted his parking validated, and he said, that's very funny.
John, I want to hear your joke.
Sorry, John. Right.
I'm kind of afraid of becoming elderly because I hate to garden. And I always wonder why old people love to garden.
Mm-hmm.
I always just figured they wanted to see new life bloom, but really I think they're just trying to get comfortable with the feeling of dirt.
You're like a less funny Norm MacDonald. Norm, you want to give them the cursory very funny? Hey, John.
He's got something with the premise there.
It's
I think
words.
You're ready to graduate from Sacramento into, let's say, Placerville.
Yeah. Big comedy scene.
Not L.A. or San Francisco, per se, but where's the Anderson split pea soup place?
Buellton.
I could see you being one of the top 20 guys working the Buellton circuit.
Well, thank you then.
Yeah, perhaps even now. I don't want to get your hopes up, but eventually, after you sort of hammer out the dents in Buellton, you work your way into Modesto and some of the other outlying areas.
Well, thanks for the inspiration.
All right, John.
Well,
no,
John, stand-up's the best, man. You got to keep it up.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Norm. I appreciate it.
All right.
Great to meet you.
Good times there, John.
You never did stand-up?
I did a little bit of stand-up, and I had that thing, too, where I was showcasing, which means open. And by the way, is it really a showcase? 70 of you show up, and a fat, bald, angry guy says only 18 of you will make the showcase, so the rest of you have to go home. But that was an open mic, and the problem is when you're doing an open mic, and Norm McDonald.
I've never done them, so I don't know.
Oh, you never done them.
No.
Well, what happens is they do it Sunday night. They do it on a slow night. They do it early. They'll do it from like 6:30 to 8 o'clock before the regular people and the regular comedians show up. But every once in a while, Norm McDonald will show up and want to work out a little material, so we have to stop between guy number 11 and guy number 12 because Norm's got some stuff he wants to work out.
Yeah.
And that's fine if it's Norm McDonald, but I had Pauly Shore come walking up once with like a steno pad and literally just do. Now, to him, it's a Sunday night at 7:15, so he's going to take his sweet time and hammer out all his wheezy material. I, as guy number 17, am not going to get up on stage tonight because 8 o'clock is looming large and Polly's doing 25 minutes on what it's like to be on MTV.
I got bumped when I was in Canada. I got bumped for Skippy one time.
He's a comedian.
Mark Price.
Yeah. He was the best friend from, I always confuse
family,
him.
Family
I confuse him with Boner.
Right.
But, Skippy decided he wanted to do stand-up. And you got bumped. The great Norm McDonald got bumped for Skippy.
He came, it was in Canada. And anytime an American showed up, it was the biggest deal of all time.
Really?
And plus, he'd been on the TV. So I got bumped. And
you were
discovered
doing comedy in Canada by SNL or here?
No, I did Letterman. And then that saw me on Letterman.
Is that what happened? And then that's when they called you in for an audition?
Yeah, it was kind of funny, actually. Like, it was a case where my agent almost, like, screwed up everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like...
You know what? This is a good tease.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I want to tease a couple of things. We were going to give some relationship advice anyway. I hope Norm can hang out and help us with that. Because I feel like between the three of us, we're the pyramid of knowledge. We've been through it. We've seen it. We've had it done to us. Norm has done it to others.
What?
And then paid them nicely for the experience. Well, it's between the three of us, we're going to have an answer for your relationship question. So call us, 866-901-ADAM. Ask that of us, but Norm will tell us how he almost wasn't on Saturday Night Live because his agent screwed up. We'll do that next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show, where Adam and Teresa are dishing out free love advice. If you need a little help, call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Norm McDonald in studio. Fan favorite Norm McDonald. House of Blues. Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, Friday night, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Tickets at HOB.com. Hey, Norm.
Huh?
So we're going to do some relationship question answering,
excellent.
But you were going to tell us about how you almost didn't make it on to Saturday Night Live.
So you were on Letterman.
And somebody spotted you.
Sandler and Spade told me, hey, there's this guy, Jim Downey, that really funny guy that's the producer of Letterman. Producer of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
He's the second guy to Lauren, you know. He was the head writer. So they said, hey, our boss likes you, you know. So I'm like, really? You know? And they're like, yeah. So I was like,
so they're already on the show.
Yeah.
And you're friends with them.
And then he saw me on Letterman. So they said, he likes you, you know. So I went to my agent. I said, listen, the guy that Jim Downey at Saturday Night Live likes me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should, like, phone them and, like, you know, see what happens, right? So then they phone and they come back to me and they go, okay, well, this is how it works. You got to submit sketches to this girl at Saturday Night Live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I don't want to do that because I don't know how to write sketches, you know? And this guy already likes me, you know?
Right.
And they were putting me through the regular channels where I knew I'd never get on.
Right. You know? It's like once in a while you're going to a club or an event where you're invited and you know you're supposed to walk across the velvet rope area, but the bouncer guy doesn't know who you are and he tells you to get in line. And then you feel like an idiot when you go, don't you know who I am? But you don't want to get in the back of the line.
Right. Exactly. So my agent was telling me to see the bouncer. You know
right.
what I mean? So I was saying, no, that would be bad. Like, I don't want to write a sketch. The guy already likes me. A sketch could only hurt it. You know what
sure.
I mean? Me trying to write a sketch when I don't know how to do that. So they said, oh, we can't get a hold of Jim Downey. So then I just phoned Saturday Night Live, like through the phone book. There was phone books back then.
Were you on Aruba?
Wait a second. You looked up Saturday Night Live in the phone book.
No, not the phone book, I guess. I found information, you know. But I just, by luck, got this guy on the phone, and that's how I got the job. So
you got Downey on the phone. Downey was a fan of yours, and you didn't have to go through the traditional audition, or
no,
did you?
No, thank God I didn't. Well, no, because traditionally on Saturday Night Live, you have to go in front of Lorne on an empty stage with no audience, do three characters.
Oh, how
and
brutal.
Three impressions, and I had no characters. And I had one impression, but it was of Gene Rayburn. So I knew that wasn't like going to help me.
The guy with the skinny mic?
Yeah, yeah. Select A or B, Marjorie. That was my impression.
I do three, but two of them are Norm MacDonald. And then one is Death from The Family Guy. So it's a little bit of a cop-out.
Norm, that must have been so nerve-wracking your first week on the show.
On Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't because I read Jay Moore's book, and he made it sound like a hellish hazing the first year there.
No, I didn't care about anything. I mean, you know.
Well, also, do you think being Canadian helped? And the reason I ask is, if there was a show that was mammoth in Canada, I'm not sure what you call it, I wouldn't be as intimidated not growing up around it. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I grew up.
I mean,
with
you
Saturday
saw
Live.
Saturday Night Live. You knew it, but did you feel like?
No, I absolutely.
So,
but
why
I wasn't
were
going
you
on
intimidated?
With, I wasn't going out with Belushi and Chevy Chase
right.
and Aykroyd and stuff like that. I was just going out with Sandler and Spade and guys I knew. You know.
Right. So you felt like you were at home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
All right. And by the way, if you can't be funnier than Jan Hooks, then you don't deserve to work in this business. Norm told me that off the air.
Hey.
So the point is, you don't realize all the people that have passed through those doors whose name you've forgotten about. You remember the names you remember, but there's been a lot of cast members who've been through there. I don't know. Is it 200
that's
yet?
That's the problem about Saturday Night Live is when you leave it, right? Because a very tiny amount have gone on to giant fame.
Right.
But the most have fizzled into obscurity.
Sure.
So after you leave...
Oh, by the way, Norm's going to be at the House of Blues at the Mandalay Bay tomorrow night. Sorry, Norm. Go ahead. No one reminded me to say that.
That's my point, is that if you don't go to giant fame, you're always like, what happened? Why didn't he? You know, even though it's just a tiny amount. That
right. It's like
do.
You yelling at somebody, why haven't you won the lottery yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Not
right.
necessarily their fault. The odds are against them. All right. Well, there's Norm in Saturday Night Live. And by the way, I loved the news. I loved everything you did on Saturday Night Live. I especially loved, you know, young Burt Reynolds. But the news, how many seasons did you do the news?
2.5 seasons.
And were you fired because of the jokes you wrote? Was it the OJ jokes? What
I think
what
it was just
you?
The jokes were... what I heard from the guy that was the president was, and I understood what he was saying was... a lot of jokes I did would get no response.
Kind I know,
of,
but it was funny.
They were kind of stupid, like retarded jokes.
Well, how did you get the word that, by the way, next week you won't be doing Weekend Update?
But Norm would
But he would say, like, and I understood his point completely. He would phone and go, hey, you're only doing 5 minutes a week, and some of your jokes aren't getting laughs. And Leno does 25 minutes a night, and every joke kills.
I know, but who cares? I mean, 100 years from now, all right, they'll be talking about Leno, but still.
So that's how he broke it to you? He just said, all of these jokes have to get laughs.
No, he broke it to me. He said, you're out.
Get ready with the crickets, by the way, Brian. But here's what it would be like, although I would be home laughing like a retarded hyena. But Norm would be like, hey, the poll just came out for worst jobs of the year. Second worst, crack whore. Worst job, assistant crack whore. Yeah.
Well, this is the day.
All right. All-time best joke
spot.
On purpose, I was doing this thing where I would not do any savers, because normally guys would do, say, you know,
right.
Do, hey, but whoa, is it hot in here? You know,
yeah. Right.
Like
so
when a joke
on?
Didn't work.
Right.
Yeah, too soon.
So instead, I would just have dead silence.
That was funny.
And the, like the stage manager would be like, next joke, you know. And just to kind of irritate him and the director, I just stare at the camera for no
reason. Listen, I'm with Norm. Why not A, entertain yourself and a handful of your buddies in Canada? Who screw America?
Yeah, that's kind of what it was.
Well, I personally loved it. All right. Now, we were talking about your questions. Your questions on the topic of relationships. Let's talk to David. David? And I feel like, again, between the three of us, we have every question covered. David?
Hello?
David, what's up?
How are you guys? What's going on, Norm?
Hey.
You know what? I listen to Tom Likas pretty much every day. And so, yeah, so I pretty much kind of know the answer to this question, but I just want to know what Norm thinks also about it. Norm, I started dating this girl. She's 21 and has a 6-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And,
so she was pregnant
yeah.
when she was 11. All right.
And I was just wondering what if he's actually ever dated a girl.
All right, hold on a second. This line's a little crappy, so I'm going to jump in. I see what's going on here, and I know what Likas would say. Dump that bitch.
That's my favorite part of the show.
Let me say this. It all depends, because a kid is baggage. And if a hot chick doesn't have baggage, then you don't get to date her, because you're a crappy 20-year-old with a crappy job.
Right.
But if a hot chick has some baggage, that's a different angle. You see, for me, I would rather get a high-end stainless steel appliance with a dent in the side of it rather than the avocado-colored one that I could afford.
Yes, and I like to think of a child as a dent.
It's a factory second. No, but here's the thing. Okay, let me just say
this. Right. He can date above his
right.
status.
It's like this. Let's just put it this way. If they're, okay, you're a 20-year-old guy, you're squirrely, you work at Blockbuster, you don't make a ton of money, you got a bunch of roommates and all that kind of stuff. You should be dating this sort of chick. But you could be dating a super hot chick who's missing a foot. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's an angle. I like that angle.
A super hot chick that has a lot of sexual experience.
That's a decent point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like that's the guy.
So here's my point. If you're a 6 and she's a 9, but the kid knocked her down to a 7, then you're still doing good. T, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I really do. I agree. It's going to be harder for her to date with a kid. She's 21 years old. She had the kid at 15. She's going to have a hard time finding somebody right. who wants to take her out on a Saturday night. This guy can move right in.
So the rule is, if you could have dated her without the kid, then you don't need her.
Well, I think that you could...
You could
end up being in love with two people.
The kid and...
Yeah.
Norm. Wow.
That's
beautiful.
Sweet.
I know.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for that guy that's where he's getting his information about women.
Well, he's 20.
Boo!
Cody?
Yeah.
Cody? 19-year-old Cody. Cody, you're in a long-distance relationship?
Yes, I am. It's a great honor to talk to you, Adam. You're a real inspiration to me. I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
I just want to say thanks for the news.
Oh, thanks.
You keep me informed. And Norm, I love Dirty Work. It was the first movie I ever saw you in, and it was great.
Let me ask this quickly about Dirty Work. You, Artie Lang's in that movie, I believe. I enjoyed that movie, too. How come it's never, ever on cable?
That's a good question.
Does anyone know the answer to that?
I don't know. People don't.
Wish it was.
It wasn't funny or was crappy or it was low budget or whatever, because those movies are all over cable all the time. Not that Dirty Work was any of those things, but it doesn't...
Well, it was considered all those things. But it's strange because every movie is on cable all the time,
Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo's on 19 times a day. You were the only good 4 minutes in that entire movie. Norm was excellent in that movie, but the only smile in the movie, as a matter of fact, the rest of it was actually confusing. I wouldn't even call it unfunny. I would just be... Yeah, go ahead.
It was good for hardcore pornography.
Directed by Bob Saget.
But Dirty Work, and there's another Dirty Work movie that I always think is your movie, but it's not, that always comes up on cable. But anyway, go ahead, Cody.
That's the title.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Cody.
Okay, so yeah, I've been in this long-distance relationship with my girlfriend from San Francisco. I originally went up to San Francisco with one of my friends because he was going to meet another girl. Mm-hmm. Went up to the party, ended up getting serious with this girl. I've been dating her for about 14 months now, and I really do, like, I feel that I love her, and I want to stay with her. But it's just kind of hard because it's a lot of time, a lot of money to go up to San Francisco, like, as often as we were going.
All right. Well, Cody, you're 19, and that's the operative word here, 19. That's a big deal. You see, if you were divorced and you're 42, that'd be another thing. But you're 19. On the other hand, this whole Southwest airline has blown the lid off all the long-distance relationships, because for $9, there's 128 flights that leave Burbank every 4 minutes that go to your girlfriend's house. Southwest actually now lands in people's driveways or just pushes them out when they're over the target. I mean, so I can't afford to see my girlfriend in the Bay Area. It no longer works anymore, because for $14, you can go first class both ways. Cody?
All right.
So on that's one argument, the Southwest argument. But the other one is at 19, you shouldn't be in a long-term, long-distance relationship.
Cody,
I don't think it's healthy.
Can either of you move?
Yeah, well, actually, that's the thing. She is transferring schools, because she went up there for school. And she is transferring after the semester, which is in like 4 months, like down to closer, down to San Diego, where I'm actually ending up anyways. So that's where my dilemma is. Like, I know... like, it's hard to do, but it's only 4 more months.
No, all right. For 4 months,
nothing.
Suck it up.
Yeah, you've been together 14 months and you love her. You're lucky. 4 months is nothing.
I got to say this, too. With DVD porn and, I mean, now, seriously. Seriously, just dig this for a second. Between Southwest and the internet, porn on the internet, long-distance relationships have been opened up and extended by years.
You throw in a webcam.
You throw in a webcam, you're done. I mean, think about the old days. You couldn't get to the person. Like, what do you got to do? Well, I got to borrow my dad's Noah, and then I got to gas it up, and I got to drive.
I know you're talking about the really old days. Because, like, I watch these cowboy movies, and they're like, I'll be back in 2 years.
Right. Where are you going? To the mailbox. I'm just saying, with internet porn, you can keep the edge off. You know what I mean? You can make it 4 months. You get a nice, you know, a little Lubriderm and a little U-porn. That'll take the edge off.
What's U-porn?
Oh,
my gosh.
You know
Don't tell him.
Would be my answer to that.
I'll fire it up for you during the commercial.
Yeah, let's take
it's
a break.
Like YouTube?
Let's take, let's take a break. By the way, it's not that Norm is naive or anything. It's just he's on gambling websites all the wee hours of the morning. He doesn't even have time. He doesn't have time for porn because he has a bigger addiction known as gambling.
I'm only on PokerStars.
That's all? All right.
The only one I go on is PokerStars.
Well, let's take a quick break.
That guy sounds hot.
Norm McDonald is here. You have more relationship questions. We have more answers, and we'll do that next.
Welcome back to the Adam Carolla Show. Every now and again, we like to break down the game film of PBS's Huell Hauser. But sometimes there's just not enough time for all the clips. So here's another one of Huell's Jewels.
Now, we had arranged to meet up with a member of the local historical society for a tour of the town. And what better place to meet than one of the most popular local restaurants, which not only had great food and friendly employees, but a ceiling filled with baseball hats.
Thanks, Huell. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Must be great not to worry about ratings or sponsors or bosses. I got to get on public something.
What accent? I thought that was a guy doing an impression. It sounded
no,
so ridiculous.
No, he's serious.
What accent is that?
This is amazing.
He's Kentucky Southern. Gay.
Now, before we go any further, I've got to apologize to everybody.
Huell just walks around with a microphone and talks to old people about gravel.
Are you all having as much fun as we are learning about this kind of stuff?
Seriously, Brian, can you find Huell with the old timer? He interviewed a guy for 20 minutes about gravel. lost.
Spit take from Norm.
I know, that was really.
Well, he's on public. He's on public television, so he doesn't worry about ratings or competition or anything.
I got it. Listen for the old man's reaction.
Yeah, where's Shule?
Tell me about all these rocks.
Yeah.
It's rocks that I picked up over a period of years. It's been a few years since I've done it.
Boom, Mike.
Wow, this is amazing. You've got little rocks, big rocks. Look at this one. What is this?
Medium-sized rocks.
You've got coffee cans full of rocks over here.
I know. I saw this, so I'm going to paint the picture. Picture an old-timer wearing pajama bottoms and cowboy boots standing on a dirt lawn. With like a really looking like Dust Bowl circa 1930s, you know, Heartland, and he's standing out there like, you know, old guys look like they slept in their clothes. That look like they actually slept in a hunting hat, and he's holding a rusty coffee can with aggregate in it, essentially. It's the world's most plentiful substance.
It sounds like if Hugo Hazard or you as a host got to a place and then suddenly realized all there were rocks and you were trying to make the fist.
Oh, he did because he was heading... He was heading to the Baghdad Cafe, and I think he went on a road trip, and he went to a museum that was closed, so he found an old guy who was holding rocks.
This is great.
And he did a hard-hitting interview with him on his dirt lawn. Well, as long as you're laughing at that, find Huel at the Baghdad Cafe, because this... Now, Norm, you're a funny guy, and so am I, but we're not talented enough to write this.
Right.
This is Huel talking to the owner of the Baghdad Cafe, which is like in Barstow, California, and he's not mic'd, he's on the phone. Yeah. This is that conversation.
Howdy, how you doing? Well, we're just doing an interview here, finding out about the Baghdad Cafe. Is that picture in there of Burt Lancaster? Why is there a portrait of Burt Lancaster in here on the wall of the Baghdad Cafe? Oh, you just bought it. He's never actually been here.
That's the greatest comedy ever.
He just hung it up. Well, it looks good.
That 22 Mississippi before Huel says, oh, you just bought it. He's never been here. You can't write that good, can you, Norm?
No. Why? So why don't you hear the other guy?
He's on the phone.
Yeah. He didn't have an extra mic.
They couldn't toss a lav on the guy. He was probably in the next county, and they didn't call ahead. By the way, this is why we have to get on public television, because, see, Norm, you do a couple of seasons of SNL, and we're not getting laughs from the audience, and you're S-canned, right? Meanwhile, Huel's going on his 30th year of interviewing people over the phone about Burt Lancaster.
And when you say he was on his way to a museum, you don't mean a museum of modern art.
No, it was probably like the Tortilla Museum or something.
The Rock Museum. I think there was a Bunny Museum.
Oh, dear God. Dear God. But you got to get into Huel.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Hey, Jamie?
Yes, sir.
What's happening?
Oh, not a damn thing, because I can't really move my arms.
You can't move your arms?
No, sir. I have two broken elbows.
Really? What happened?
I fell.
The Giants covered.
Hey, you're calling from Vegas, though, right?
Yes, sir. Nellis Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. And do you think somebody could push you down to the House of Blues tomorrow night and check out Norm at the Mandalay Bay?
Well, it's a great place to see comedy. I saw Michael Ian Black there, a very funny man, Michael Showalter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think they can wheel me down there if I could get tickets.
Well, how did you break those elbows?
Oh, well, I fell off of a, like, kind of a high curb, about a foot and a half curb, and fell into a push-up position and cracked both my elbows.
Mm-hmm. And,
wow. That's interesting, because, like, I knew a guy in New York during the winter, stepped off a curb and crushed his ankle, like every bone in it, and was like a year just from stepping off a curb. That happens.
It's amazing. Hey, Jamie.
Yes.
You're 29.
Yes, I am.
This is the accident of an elderly man?
Yes, like breaking a hip or something.
Yeah, you may want to start eating more cottage cheese and maybe go in and get like a PET scan or something.
I'm drinking more milk now.
Were you distracted?
But he's in the Army. He's in the Army.
Are you in the Air Force?
Yes, Air Force.
And when you stepped out this curve, were you distracted or was there a car or you just...
Actually, here in Las Vegas, we have very high winds. And so in mid-step, I kind of shuffled, and that threw off my balance, and down I went.
Hey, Jamie?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to tell you to lie about how you broke your elbows, but go ahead and lie. And, you know, okay. Especially being in the military.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've already made up those lies. Okay. About being
Talk about Al-Qaeda trying to take over the base.
Okay, well,
and,
we're holed up in this building, and an RPG came in. I was on the outside of the concussion, and it blew me up against the wall. I put my arms out to brace myself.
I'll tell you what you do, too. You call yourself Hombre, and you go, this Hombre wasn't going to stand for it.
Well, I had to get those men out of there.
That's right. They're brothers behind. That's right.
This is good, Jamie.
Even though you're only armed with your wits. Sure, I like being armed with something that's in your skull,
yeah,
by the way. I was only armed with my wits. But you're armed with your wits. You're able to take down these the sleeper cell single-handedly.
So double-footedly.
Of course, it was a small price to pay breaking. And when people are sympathetic about the two elbows being broken, it's like, yeah, well, there are a lot of guys that aren't going home.
Some weren't so lucky.
Yes. They're the real heroes.
They're the real. Yeah, do that thing where you explain they're the real heroes. Even though they were asleep when a bomb went off, when a mortar went off in the bunks, half of them were probably masturbating.
Jamie, besides the two broken elbows, what's the problem?
I like when the real heroes
are
teachers.
Well, I call it for their relationship advice, you see.
Great.
You see,
I mean, the flunkies that couldn't make it in the real world. the guys with the hygiene prom that couldn't make it in corporate America.
Jamie,
those are the real heroes.
They insult our good and great teachers. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Well, see, the thing is, I'm having to rely on my wife for everything. I mean, she has to dress me. She has
well,
to...
she's the real hero then.
Brian, make the masturbation
absolutely.
Sound again.
Is she a school teacher?
Well, no, she actually works for the county. She's a property manager.
Well, those are
those
the real
are the
heroes.
Heroes. She's the property manager.
The assessors and the accounters.
Surveyors.
The surveyors. Those are the real heroes.
So you feel bad because she has to do everything for you?
Yes, I feel guilty. I feel almost like undeserving of such love.
Well,
that she's shown me.
Look, I gotta say this. I've driven a car with my knee almost halfway around the world now, if you added it up, you know? I feel like if you had an automatic, you could still drive with the broken elbows. Hell, there's quads that drive vans with their teeth. Jesus Christ, Jamie, you're a military man.
Well, actually, I was told it was illegal for me to drive because I'm whacked out on Lortab and I'm impaired.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I seen a fella with no arms play a guitar once.
I think Huell interviewed him. Hey, Jamie.
Yes, sir.
You're a young man. The casts are coming off when?
At the end of the month.
At the end of the month.
Yeah.
So what? A couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Did you go to break your fall with your hands and then your arms invert like?
Both elbows broke.
Both elbows went in. Wow.
Yeah, he was in a push-up.
Right. The shock went up the bones into the elbows.
Mm-hmm.
Crack, and now I can't feed myself.
Accept everything she's doing for you because there'll probably be an occasion where you have to reciprocate.
For two more weeks. And, Jamie, how about when you hear about those stories of guys whose parachute didn't open, only breaking a leg?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
They fell from 14,000 feet.
You fell
off a 9-inch curb, and you're worse shape than they are?
Right.
And they're the real heroes, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, I need to take a multivitamin or something.
Please. All right. Well, go see Norm, by the way, when you're Vegas. If your wife drag you to see Norm.
Oh, how's he going to clap? Will the wife have to clap?
There's no audible response to his act. What are you talking about? I thought we covered that. All right, one more question.
I can't follow Michael Ian Black.
Ooh.
Jessica?
Good morning.
What's happening?
Two funny men and a beautiful lady. Good day to you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Funny lady.
We live in a 480 square foot cabin and have two young babies. And the day that my brother-in-law is driving up from Northern California, I find out that we are going to be taking care of his pit bull for a while.
Mm-hmm. Now, 480 square foot cabin is a standard cabin size, which is just a small cabin, right?
Right.
I mean, 480 square...
Plan.
480 square foot is a small one-bedroom apartment.
Or even a studio. Yeah,
even
like
a studio.
Lincoln's. What was Lincoln's cabin?
Right.
480 square feet, I think.
Ask Huell Hauser.
Huell interviewed him.
This is amazing.
All right, so you guys are essentially living like the Unabomber.
Hey, yeah, it's the and my husband's full beard and long hair too. So
awesome! So he married Rob Kaczynski, Ted's older brother, who is less sociable. Fantastic plan, by the way. Now you're going to raise kids with this mountain man
and the pit bull.
Absolutely, and a pit bull. And the night. Okay, so
did you say you had kids?
Two.
This is child abuse.
Babies. No way. Oh, come on.
Is the FBI surrounding your cabin right now?
The kids have their bedrooms. They're just little teepees out in the yard.
Uh-huh. And how is it up on Ruby Ridge these days? Is the weather nice?
You know, Adam, I live without electricity, too. And so I use one of those hand crank radios. And it has a little solar panel on top. And the only way that your show comes in is if the antenna is pointing straight towards the toilet.
So let me get this. Let me get this straight. Vandersloot did not have a cell phone, but you live up the wilds of Montana with Dan Haggerty, who does nothing but send explosive devices to faculty members of liberal colleges in the Bay Area, and yet you have a cell phone?
That's my only form of communication.
Wow. That's what I love about this country.
Jessica, I thought being off the grid, you would have no problems.
Me too. But here,
the husband's like, we got to have this cell phone in an emergency, like if I run out of fuses.
So, in the
so
night
I can text my manifesto to the New York Times.
Hey, sweetie, how's this hoodie look on me? Does this hoodie make me look fat?
Your head looks kind of square in it.
I'm going to the ATM. Do you have your Richard Nixon mask?
So, Jessica, what's going on?
So I'm Ruby now Rich. I end up with a redheaded stepchild, so to speak, because the night that Diesel came up to stay with us, this is November, and so it's cold outside. We have another dog, but, you know, we have their outside area, and our dog was from Montana, so he's used to the snow and whatever else. But Diesel's a California dog, and he can't stay outside, so then we have two dogs.
Especially when the outside is inside, because you're living in a cabin where you can see daylight passing through the walls because some sod fell off last season. There was an early thaw, and some of the wall fell off.
It's a strong stick-built house.
Jessica, wait a minute. I want to know, what your husband, what does he do?
He's a house
right.
dad.
He's a what?
He's a house dad. He takes care of the kids.
What do you guys do for income?
I'm a dance teacher.
You know what? You're the real apparel. Hey, buddy, the Queen of Sod, the Marquis de Sod is hitting the stage. She's a mountain woman, so you got to excuse her appearance downstairs. You know, they don't get a lot of them Lady Bics up in high country. Hey, I'm pitching a log cabin in my pants right now, man. Quit your grin and drop your linen. And welcome to the stage, Pocahontas. Stage four. Oh, it's a little business to take care of.
No, Adam, dance teachers are the real heroes, and we haven't even helped Jessica with her problem.
Well, what is the problem?
No, I'm a dance teacher to farmers and hunters. I teach buffalo rain dances and deer dances.
Hey, everybody, do that thing where you take your forefingers and put it inside of your head like you're a bull, and then do that thing where you drag your right foot on the ground like you're on a skateboard, but you're not going anywhere. Toro. Come on, Buffalo soldiers, you go around the outside. Jade, stage four, Jade. Wow. So it must be incredibly lucrative because you're the only human being on the planet that would do this. You have zero competition. Like, good news and bad news in terms of money making. Good news, no competition. You're the only person on the planet that changes farmers to do the buffalo dance. Bad news is farmers hate the buffalo dance.
They're trying to ban it.
I see. All right.
Jessica supporting a family of four on the salary of a buffalo dance teacher.
Oh, man.
Oh, you guys are great. So, Diesel's on the house. The very first night that he's here, his owner gives him like $20 worth of steak. And so we're in our...
Diesel, the Rottweiler from the Bay Area?
Pitbull.
Oh, the Pitbull.
Pitbull from the Bay Area, yep. And,
Now this is somebody... Whose dog is this? This is the brother-in-law?
Correct.
Brother-in-law, and they're dropping... They're dropping Diesel off at the cabin. Why?
Because he is a fireman. He has a 4 days on, 4 days off schedule. Broke up with his girlfriend, and so Diesel he didn't have anybody at home with him.
All right. Listen, I have a simple solution to all
this. Remember the days when we thought firemen were the real heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore. Turns out it's Buffalo dance teachers. Hey, Jessica. Yeah. Look, by the way, I don't know if dogs can, you know, have this kind of thought process, but Diesel must be bummed. Like when that cabin door swung open and he took a little survey of the room. I went, wait a minute. I'm a dog and this is not enough for me. I got two words for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting accident. The mountain man went out shooting for his food. Diesel went off chasing after the possum. My husband thought it was a black guy, and the next thing you know... Anyway, it's the way Diesel would have wanted it. Don't worry. We gave a ceremonial burial in the backyard. I did the buffalo dance. Now, let's see. All right? I think I've covered that. Hey,
that
Norm.
That was odd.
Norm, hang out, would you please?
Yeah.
I feel like you're my muse.
That was odd.
Hey, T.
Yep.
You got the news ready?
Yeah, huge trade in the NBA. We'll talk about that. And Miss Nevada in a lot of trouble today in Vegas.
We'll take a break. Norm McDonald is here. He's going to be the Vegas House of Blues coming up on Friday.
Really?
Back with the news.
Is it Paul Gasol?
No, bigger.
Really?
Back with the news and Norm McDonald next.
Still to come tonight, we're going to see where you're going to be shelling out more to get your morning coffee.
Which is healthier, home cooking or eating out?
Also, a pedophile among us.
That's a great moment in local news. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, I hear we have a couple of tickets, by the way, to give away to Norm, who's going to be at House of Blues, Mandalay Bay, tomorrow night in Vegas. Yes?
Do I have tickets I'm going to give?
We have tickets.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Tickets were given away to Norm's show. So if you're in Vegas, and we have a lot of listeners in Vegas.
What
about
that guy with the broken elbows?
Oh, that would have been perfect. And he's in the Air Force?
Yeah,
he's a Michael Ian Black fan, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like Michael Ian Black, you're going to hate Norm McDonald. But here's the other thing. What's going, you know, nothing's going over on the base on a Friday night.
Right. Hey, Broken Elbows, give us a call at 866-901-ADAM.
Or anyone else in Vegas, or anyone else
who has... Yeah, Broken Elbows, some engine will call.
That's right.
Sorry.
Yeah, hey, Norm McDonald. Not want to go to Mandalay Bay. See Canadian pale face. Speak them with forked tongue.
They have their own casinos.
Make them joke. Then make them womp them over at the roulette wheel. You know what we call roulette wheel in Chiricahua? Roulette wheel. I think it's French. We don't have a new word for everything. Yeah, we eat all parts of roulette wheel. Let none go to waste. Although the white man, he bring an infected complimentary cocktail. Poison tribe. Then heading off to Star Garden to see ladies drop loincloth. Big night. See you in Champagne Room. Yeah, hey. Gave a broken elbow. It sounds like a miniseries on TBS, doesn't it? Lonesome Dove, broken elbow. Yeah, lost many men at the Battle of Broken Elbow. All right, T.
Yes.
Sorry, what's going on? The
Teresa
news.
Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
Before I get to Miss Nevada, I'll get to this briefly. CNN reporting that Mitt Romney may be dropping out of the race. He's scheduled to talk shortly and likely to confirm that. So your guy,
I see it
Mitt,
up there. Yeah. Spokesperson said he ran out of Grecian formula.
Couldn't get any more?
That's it.
You can't run without that.
It's all over.
He had to be stopped.
That's right. Jack Silbert bogarted all the Grecian formula. Ah, yes.
So the race thinning out.
Good times.
I think he wanted to spend more time with his kid and wives.
Well, they're the heroes. Wives.
All right. Well, you'll be in Vegas soon, and this will probably be all the talk there. Norm, do you remember Katie Reese? She's the former Miss Nevada USA who was forced to give back her crown in 06 after pictures of her getting naked and hammered showed up online.
Yeah. She's the one that had the she wasn't the Trump one. She was the one that actually had to leave,
She, and the pictures were, a lot of people called them soft core. There's
they look like
porn.
those fun pictures like that,
the
right?
Lake Havasu Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
Vandersloot offered to dump her in the ocean, by the way.
The pictures show her pretending to give oral to a guy. He has his clothes on, and then there's some of her and other girls. They're pretty racy.
They're racy, but they look like in fun. They don't look like.
Look, it's all pretty standard stuff, but not if you're Miss whatever.
Right. The people at Miss USA didn't think
Miss
it was fun.
Not if you're Miss Nevada.
Right.
Although I would say...
represent the great state of Nevada.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think we should hold, like, Miss Nevada to a much lower standard than, let's say, Miss Salt Lake or Miss Utah, right?
Exactly. Well, you can imagine...
You should represent the sexual mores of the country or the city or the state that you're from, right?
Right. It's community standards.
Well, times may have been tough since the Miss USA people removed her from her post and took her crown. Katie was pulled over a little before 3 a.m. for a traffic violation.
Hold on, I'm putting on that on my list of things I want to do before I die. Be stripped of a crown.
For doing what?
That doesn't matter. The fact is I earned it fair and square, and the man took it away.
Well, during her police stop this morning at 3 a.m., cops learned that Katie was driving on a suspended license. When they tried to arrest her, she totally lost it and reportedly began throwing elbows and kicking cops. Mm. Katie is being held on 6 misdemeanor charges, including resisting a police officer, driving on a suspended license, driving with suspended license plates, and speeding.
Throwing elbows sounds like either one of the Braves from the Broken Elbows tribe or like a great indie band.
Throwing elbows.
Who are they opening for? That mighty
Snow
mouse?
Patrol.
Yeah.
You download it. Do you have their new stuff?
Is it good? I like
throwing
the old.
Elbows.
Yeah.
No, the old's the new's awesome.
Classic throwing elbows is kind of more my thing.
You haven't gotten into new throwing elbows?
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
Go on your iPod and load that stuff in. Kids are loving throwing elbows.
How could she hurt policemen though?
Well,
she's 108 pounds. What'd she do? Vomit on them?
She's resisted
a beauty
arrest.
Queen. And by the way, that's your best day as a cop when a hot chick is coming at you.
Yeah.
That's good for a grab.
You want to hear a little? This is Miss Nevada back in 06 when she was trying to defend those photos.
I don't really look at it like that because I don't see myself as that type of person. I would describe him as risque. I would describe him as nothing to be proud of. I would describe him as something that I would take back, yes, but... As soft porn, I mean, every girl has their crazy time. Yeah. The soft porn just seems kind of harsh to me.
And by the way, my kid is going to grow up in a world like 15 years from now where soft core porn is considered just anal, just straight anal. That'll be considered. That'll be on like Cinemax at 8:30 in the evening. It'll be considered soft porn. Soft core.
Well, on to sports news. Norm, I didn't know you were a big NBA fan till now.
Oh, yeah.
He loves anything he can gamble on.
Well, Shaquille O'Neal has
How
been
much
traded.
Did you lose on the Super Bowl, Norm?
I quit sports betting.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, he only does poker.
I would have won, that's for sure.
So you quit sports betting, but you just play poker now?
I quit at the wrong time because there are a lot of easy...
You were about to get on a hypothetical roll.
Well, that's Super Bowl. Sure. My God, if anybody.
Yeah, I won
think
that.
Vegas must have lost money on that.
Nevada casinos lost over $2 million.
$2 million?
Yeah, it was the first time they'd lost since some other big upset, and they only lost $400,000 that last time.
Yeah, I know
I took the Giants because the Pats had won their last three Super Bowls by a combined 9 points. So I think the plan was the Pats win, and they've done all their winning, including the Giants, who they're playing in the Super Bowl. They beat them by 3 points. So yeah, they beat the Giants by 3 points 3 or 4 weeks ago. They've won their last three Super Bowls in last-minute field goals. So, okay, the Pats are going to win by how many points? 3 points. Right. The spread is 12.
And there was a hot lady going for Tom Brady.
Yeah,
that's
weak
a
in the
recipe
knees.
Recipe for a disaster.
That's right.
Shaquille O'Neal has been traded from the Miami Heat to the Phoenix Suns. In return, Miami got players Sean Marion and Marcus Banks from Phoenix. Wow. Shaq was with Miami for 4 years, and they were pretty. They used to be good back when Dwayne Wade wasn't injured and.
So Shaq was
as long as Shaq is good, whoever's beside him is good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like Penny Hardaway, he was a huge star because he played beside Shaq. Then Shaq left, Penny has vanished.
So it's like you're a linebacker in the NFL and you have a great 350-pound nose tackle or tackle that's stuffing up the line. The guard ain't firing out and getting to you, and you're leading the team in tackles.
Right, because
that guy's running interference for you.
Now, some say Shaq is beyond his best years. He's almost 36, and obviously a big guy like that takes a pounding. The feet, the legs.
He's 36?
Almost 36, yeah. Had a lot of foot, leg, hip, knee problems. Steve Kerr is the Phoenix Suns GM. Here's what he had to say about Shaq.
He doesn't have to be the star. He can be one of our guys, but he can be one of our guys who's unlike any of our other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Steve Kerr from the Bulls?
Sure. Yeah.
Three-point shooter.
Yeah, the shot.
Little white guy. And are you sitting, Norm? He hustled. Yeah. He was a white guy that not only drained the three, but hustled. You don't hear about that in the NBA.
I know.
Second most accurate three-point shooter, but I don't know who the first is.
Oh, Reggie Miller.
B.J. Armstrong?
Oh.
Or Craig Hodges, one of those three.
Reggie probably has it in total points from the three-point land.
I think accuracy is different.
But not in percentage.
Probably has it in crunch time.
No, but he's probably drained more threes than anybody else, but he's shot more threes than anybody else, and thus his percentage isn't as great.
Right.
Say B.J. Armstrong. I'll look it up.
Well, we know a lot about basketball in this room.
I'm a big fan. I loved Kerr back in the day. He has...
Kerr hit that the biggest shot in... Bulls history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When everybody expected Jordan to hit it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he spent most of his childhood in Lebanon. Did you know his father was like a professor, and I think he taught there, and he was shot and killed.
If I had a nickel for every NBA, for every guy in the NBA whose dad was a professor in Lebanon, I'd be a rich man.
No, seems unusual. Anyway, this is a pretty big decision for Steve Kerr. It's controversial because a lot of people think, Shaq is pretty broken down. So it could either be really good or really bad. Here is what Steve had to say about that.
Yeah, this is it, right? I mean, if it works, then I'm a genius. If it doesn't, I'm a moron, I guess. that's the way it goes. But that's part of being in this position.
Yeah. Suns are 34-15. They're playing very well.
All right.
Heat not as well.
Yeah. What are the Celtics?
Celtics had like two losses last I heard. I don't know if they lost another one.
They have the best record in the league. I'm not sure the exact record.
But they are...
They were going for the record, but then they lost a bunch.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
What else, T?
Prostitution.
Yeah.
Let's get to that. Okay. The Better Business Bureau is great for a lot of situations. Like if your mechanic cheats you on labor or the guy putting in your neighbor's pool knocks out a water main. But if a prostitute runs off with your cash before giving up the goods... Then who do you call? Well, that was the problem facing a guy. His name has not been released. He's from Hillmar, California, about 40 miles east of San Jose. He paid an exotic dancer $180 to come to his house and give him a striptease.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is described as Hispanic, about 5'8" and 130 pounds with blonde hair. She did her striptease, then offered to have sex with the man for another $80, but only if he agreed to wear a condom. So the guy gave her the extra bucks, $80, then left the room to find a condom. When he returned, she was gone, and so was the $80. He got upset and decided to put a call into the cops.
Yeah.
When the police arrived, the guy told them exactly what had happened.
By the way, this is why I have the deadbolts that are keyed on both sides. You know what I mean? Because right. I've been, fool me once. Shame on me. No, shame on, well, you know what I'm saying. Yeah, shame on you. Yeah, yeah. I've been burned way too many times going and looking for a condom and having a hooker escape from my apartment.
Well, what the cops did was remind him that it's actually illegal to pay for sex. And he came to the surprising conclusion that he wasn't interested in pressing charges against the Latina stripper slash prostitute.
I had a buddy.
Why'd you bring up that she was Latina?
It's yeah. right here in the story. How dare you?
I had a buddy who got drunk, called a hooker, then kept drinking and decided to call a backup hooker in case that one didn't show up to his apartment.
That's smart.
Then got into an argument with the first hooker's pimp. The first hooker's pimp said he's going back to his SUV and he's getting a shotgun and he's coming back and he's going to kill him. So then my buddy called the cops, essentially on himself, because, you know, it's a lesser of two evils, right. The pimp with the shotgun versus the pandering or whatever you get for the hookers. Plus, he was drunk. So he called the cops. The cops showed up. I don't know what he told the cops about why he needed the cops, but while the cops were there, the second hooker showed up. Bad times. This guy, by the way, was also has the great distinction of having the cops called on him for listening to music too loudly through headphones. He was in his apartment listening to punk rock so loud.
Oh, it's Daniel Killison.
Oh, it's close. And here's the next thing about this guy. This same guy, Citizen of the Year in Santa Monica.
Wow.
Now, how does this guy become Citizen of the Year in Santa Monica? He has a bunch of warrants. He doesn't want to park his car where he normally parks it, so he parks it down the alley from his apartment at one of his other guys' houses. And while he's walking down the alley at 2 in the morning drunk, he sees a guy raping some chick in the ivy. And because this guy is semi-racist and the guy's doing the raping is a man of color, he jumps on the guy and gets him in a headlock. The guy had been in prison for 30 years for rape, got out like a week earlier, immediately started raping. So my buddy, who has a restraining order out by his neighbor and warrants out and was only walking down the alley because he had warrants and parked his car down the thing, he gets Citizen of the Year.
Oh my God.
And you know who delivered the plaque to him?
Who?
Kent McCord from Adam 12, because that's the way it works here in Hollywood. You get a guy who played a guy, a cop on TV, to deliver it.
Well, cops didn't arrest this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't actually witness him committing any crime. So he was fine, but I don't think he's going to call the cops again if a hooker takes his money.
Hey, T?
Yep.
Can we break this news off into two pieces?
Sure.
Norm McDonald's here. Tyler, 19, says Norm is the most underrated comedian in show business. Tyler?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Is that a true statement?
It is. I mean, Dirty Work and Screwed with some of the best comedies I've ever seen, and I still miss the show Norm.
Have you ever seen Dirty Work on cable?
Not on cable, never.
How does that work? And then here's the other part that's, thank you, Tyler. Here's the other part I can't figure out about life. When I grew up in North Hollywood and I was swinging a hammer, I had this fantasy that I would talk to people on TV shows and I would ask them questions like, how come this or what happened to that? And they would actually provide answers. As it turns out, nobody knows.
Nobody knows
that. I've talked to a million people about whatever happened with that or how come that worked this way. I have no idea. Dirty Work is a funny comedy. It's got Artie Lang. It's got Norm McDonald in it. Yeah. It's 10, 12 years
Chris
old now.
Farley.
Chris Farley in it. It never shows up on cable, basic or otherwise. All right, we'll take a break. We'll do the rest of the news next.
And we're back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Norm McDonald being a trooper and hanging in with us. He's going to be at the Mandalay Bay at the House of Blues tomorrow. We got a couple tickets to give away. I got someone calling in from Tampa and someone from Seattle. Not so sure. All right. So you got a call from the Vegas area.
Right.
Or
unless
somewhere.
You're gonna fly there.
Unless you're going to be in Vegas this weekend.
Or they could just have the tickets.
They just take the tickets. Yeah, put them up on eBay.
Yeah.
Hey, T.
Yep.
Finish the news, baby girl.
The police in Coos Bay, Oregon, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, did a study.
Good name for TSV.
Thank you. They wanted to know who earned more money, the people who worked inside the Walmart, your average cashier, or the panhandlers outside the Walmart.
Oh, I know where this is going.
I wonder who it is.
Yeah, gee, who could it be?
The police study found, I guess predictably, that the panhandlers outside Walmart can make $300 a day compared to your average Walmart cashier pulling in $300 for the entire week.
$300 a week?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like enough.
Yeah.
That is rough times. And the police found that most of the panhandlers aren't homeless. They've lived in the city for a long time. They have houses. According to police captain Roger Craddock, this is just their chosen profession.
But is it the cops' job to do these kinds of surveys? Or these? I mean, you're supposed to round up the panhandlers and toss them out, but you know, you're not John Stossel, for the love of Christ. Is there nobody being raped in town?
Maybe they do have a bad mustache, some of them.
True.
So they have that in common.
Well, but what's minimum wage?
I mean, leave the social commentary to the radio folk, and you just round up the panhandlers,
well, perhaps
huh?
Perhaps this helps to affect change about how they...
I don't think you can make $300 a week, because that's minimum wage is way more than that.
Yeah, well, here's the problem, too. Taxes.
Yeah.
Like, I know...
Oh, right.
This is obviously net.
I know...
Right. They keep the gross.
I don't want to start a fight here, but I know a lot of liberal folks would go, do you see how little these guys are making? And my argument would be, if you let them make a little more, a higher percentage of the money they're actually making, then they would bring home more money.
Right.
That's my argument, because taxes, when you're getting $750 an hour or $650 an hour, taxes suck. And I know you're in a low bracket, but it's still brutal. That difference, you know, that $110 a week is a ton.
That's a good point. The panhandlers do not have to pay Uncle Sam.
Well, that's most of it.
They do, but they do have to.
Well, they get 1099. Like, if I give a guy if I give a guy 40 cents, I'll 1099
him.
Sure, you don't
but
want
to. I hear they underreport like crazy.
The panhandlers.
Yeah, like Corolla gave me a quarter. Meanwhile, I told my accountant I gave the guy 75 cents when he 1099s it. I'm like.
And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, my accountant, I'm like, hey, Irv, I need you to find. He's the third. I need you to send a 1099 to that guy's shopping cart. He's got the dog with the bandana.
But truthfully, you probably gave him 4 bits. And
I gave him 4 bits. And he bit one of them.
American Idol was on last night, Norm.
Ah.
Do you watch that show?
You know what's funny about those guys with the shopping carts?
Yeah.
I just think that the one thing that's good about being homeless is you're free of all the possessions, at least.
Yeah.
Right.
And yet they stuff their shopping carts full of stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
It's like
you
if...
You think at least you'd be a hobo walking around going, hey.
Yeah, it's like if they did like Easy Rider, except for instead of a couple of hogs, they got like a Winnebago, and they put their
right.
family
exactly.
and VCR and everything into it, and they stop by Costco and load it up on... It ruins the whole point of the freedom.
Of the freedom.
Right. Plus, what's in that cart, by the way? Because I've passed a lot of carts.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything good in there.
No, it's not like survival gear.
Yeah, if I saw a pup tent, a couple mummy bags, and a stove that worked off clear alcohol, then maybe. But all I'm seeing is a bunch of, like, shells and cans and stuff.
Or
I'm not seeing
doll?
Anything.
What do they want with a doll?
I think they may be nuts.
I find
myself spending a lot of time trying to figure out the answer to nuts, and it turns out it keeps getting back to their nuts.
Man, I'm crazy. Like, as a rabbit's ass.
That guy's got his pants around his ankles, and the cops are yelling, drop the fungo bat, and he's screaming and running toward them. Why would he do that? Then somebody goes, that guy's nuts. And then I go, yeah, but I don't understand why you would run toward the cops with a softball bat. And they go, that guy's nuts. And I go, yeah, but why wouldn't you pull your pants? And the answer keeps getting back.
Yeah, it goes back to that.
Well, you also answered the question, why do people who can't sing well go on American Idol?
Because
they're nuts.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes. We don't have much time here to get into it, but if I told you there were going to be a set of twins, Chris and Corey Lane, white guys, 22-year-olds, rapping. Would you have high hopes? Let's take a listen.
Don't get it wrong, cause it ain't an audition. So sit back, just relax, and please just listen. The names Chris and Kobe Lane, and we look the same. Kinda like them Britnam twins, just not as lame. We ain't cocky, we just want you to see. We got that look, got the voice, and a personality. So I'ma cut it short, and I'ma leave it at this. If y'all don't put us through, man, we gon' be really ticked. Now, hey!
Oh, man.
They didn't go through.
Imagine the family reunion with those guys. Ugh. There's probably triplets, and they probably just killed the third guy because he had talent.
They didn't want...
like Elvis's twin. Elvis had a twin.
Right, in utero.
Elvis ate him.
Really?
Yeah.
With peanut butter?
I always feel bad because I'm one of those guys who wouldn't be bothered by that. Like, they do that thing where they go, Elvis had a twin. And Elvis knew that. And so Elvis went through his whole life knowing that he lost. And I feel like I would have been over it
when you were
4 months into my existence. Like, you'd contact me when I was in high school and go, hey, is it true yet? Huh? Oh, Timmy? Yeah, that's right. Hey, anyway, life's for the living. Let's eat. I would have never been haunted by that.
Yeah, Idol true. Finally going to Hollywood next week. I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser.
Hey, Sir Mark the Poet from Seattle. Are you there? Oh, did I punch
you
up? Oh, I hit the wrong guy. Hey, Mark the Poet.
Now you got
did I hit him now?
Well,
the lines don't line, huh? Mark the Poet.
Good morning, Adam.
You going to be in Seattle this weekend?
I am. I'm very excited that you're coming out to Seattle.
Right. So will I see you in Seattle?
Oh, well, you had mentioned you were going to put me on the guest list.
Oh, I did? That's a euphemism.
Guest list.
Watch is a
list.
That's my sexual predators list. That's my euphemism. You know how they call Britney Spears the package?
Right.
The guest list means I put you on the sexual predators list. So, Sir Mark, then I'll see you on Saturday?
Absolutely, and we're right. Bringing the posse.
Okay, great. We don't have time for the poetry this morning. We'll take a quick break, back to wrap it up next. Well, what a day. Brian Austin Green, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, Monday nights, 9 o'clock. Turns out I had a crush on his sister in junior high. Javier Bardem, everybody. No Country for Old Men. In theaters now. What a film. Norm MacDonald, Dirty Work.
That was a recent
You're trailer. Like a less funny Norm MacDonald. We all are. House of Blues, Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, tomorrow night. Also, Flavor Flav.
Are you
Flavor.
A big Norm MacDonald fan, Flav?
Flavor of Love, everybody. Monday night, 9 o'clock on VH1. Go to AdamCarolla.com. You can win some tickets to go to the Playboy Mansion with us. Do our little Knight Rider party over there. Knight Rider two-hour movie event Sunday, February 17th on NBC. And you can go to Free2HD at AdamCarolla.com. Hear the show. Hear Norm again. Hear some Crank Yanker. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Teresa Strasser saying mahalo.
I'm depressed, and I checked into the mental hospital for whoring.